recording here.
Well, the trainer said
he didn't cuss. He's all right.
Yeah. Brain
you got Eric here too, for what?
360-754.
You've had.
She was a whack job.
4831.
Was it someone you knew or?
No, it was my.
Very cool.
Three other guys there.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
We are here. We got the commissioners. We got Bronson Potter. We got Eric Hidlup from the Columbia, Mary Kelp from PIO, and Axel Swanson and myself.
Okay.
And we are in board time, open session.
We have all three commissioners?
We do.
All right. So I thought we could use today to just kind of, I guess, basically go through what my agenda says, just give you a recap on the session, talk about our land bank bill, and then a couple, three other bills we've been following related to the crossing project. And then I thought there'd be some value for Commissioners Medore and Mielke in particular to take a look at the WASAC, your Association of County bill list, in terms of their legislative agenda, and then bills that they have on the list of helpful to harmful. I say you two commissioners in particular because I know, Commissioner Stewart, you are up here more frequently participating in their meetings, so this is stuff that's going to be a little redundant for you.
Yeah, but it'll be timely as far as any input that I might be able to give at Ledge Steering on tomorrow morning.
There you go. That was cool. The genius of why I did what I did.
Smart man.
We are in today being day 52 of 105. So we're at the point of session now where we have passed the policy committee cutoff, which was 2 weeks ago this coming Friday, and then the fiscal committee cutoff, which was this past Friday. Those are the first two major hurdles slash funneling points of legislation to see what's going to remain alive between now and the end of session. We're at the part of session where we are doing floor action from pretty much 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning till you know, in the evening. They usually break at dinner if they're going to come back. Interestingly enough, they have not come back and worked an evening yet until this evening. We do know the House of Representatives is going to be working tonight till about 10 o'clock, if not later.
Wow.
They're going to be doing some bills, some more controversial stuff, which from time to time tends to happen more later into the evening. But the Senate does not plan to work late.
Senators.
Bill by volume, it's interesting that the volume of legislation, I think, is down compared to past years. I don't have any accurate numbers, but I've been told that it's down by about 25%. A lot of that due to the Senate, the makeup of the Senate being controlled by, essentially by the Republicans, but by their coalition, and the House remaining in Democrat control. I think that just in and of itself has weeded out a bunch of controversial bills that will just likely not pass the other body.
Makes sense.
So it slowed that process down. I can tell you from a lobbying standpoint, this year is a lot different than it has been in the years past. Because of that volume, I just don't sense the intensity and the buzz in the building the way I have in years past. So just a few observations there. We will stay on the floor until next Wednesday the 13th. So we'll be out on the floor until the 13th, where the House has to pass all House bills and the Senate has to pass all of their bills minus the big budget bills and frankly any other policy bills that end up being part of what we call around here the end game, the final decisions that will be made the last couple weeks of session. Following the 13th, later in that week or later in that month, close to the 20th, or excuse me, on the 20th itself, there will be a revenue forecast. And right after that, the buzz is that the Senate will release its version of the operating budget. That's a little speculative right now, but it seems to be the what they're shooting for. Traditionally, the House or Senate goes first. This happens to be one of the years that the Senate will go first. So they will throw their budget out, timing it again with the revenue forecast. Rumors I'm hearing on the revenue forecast is relatively flat. Again, that's a guess, rumor. But what we are hearing, and it seems to be, there's rumors in Olympia, and then there's rumors that we all think are true. And one of the rumors we think are true is that the caseloads will be up. So in essence, it will create what we're hearing in the neighborhood of a $300 million shortfall. So revenue may not necessarily be down, but there are more kids going to school, more kids doing higher ed slots, more folks on any number of the state programs to the tune of $300 million. So that, for those budget riders, that becomes a $300 million, more of a $300 million problem.
So $300 million problem becomes a $1.2 billion problem, right?
Well, yes, Commissioner. So
because you already had $900 million in the hole, right?
You programmatically, you were $900 million in the hole, meaning if you did everything today, or excuse me, everything next biennium the way you're doing it today, funding ongoing services at the current levels, you were in the hole about $900 million. So in essence, that pushes that number closer, the $300 million in caseloads pushes that number closer to $1.2 billion. And then throw on top of that the McCleary case, the education case. And the thought process on the education case is that it would require about $1 billion in commitment to satisfy the court's, it wasn't necessarily a mandate, but the court's decision that they have to fund basic education. There is a lot of dispute as to just what that funding level would be. The billion number is kind of the number everybody's zeroed in on, but that's not in statute, that's not in law anywhere. I do think that the number that the legislature will throw at that McCleary case will be smaller, frankly, just because of the budget realities. So you are correct in that, you know, the 900 plus the 300 plus whatever you're going to do for the McCleary case, you know, you're looking at about anywhere from 1.7, 1.8 to $2.2 billion hole.
Okay.
That the operating budget will fill. And the way it goes around here, that will totally dominate the discussion starting at the end of March. So we'll really shift to that. So I won't really have anything new to report to you on operating budget priorities and revenue assumptions and those types of things until we see budgets come out.
Got a question for you relating to operating budget. The major transportation tax increases that they were talking about in the past, gas taxes and those things have gone to the voters to increase taxes. Are they talking about the legislature and the raising taxes outside of the voter approval process?
And so, Commissioner Madure, are you asking specifically about transportation package,
yeah,
or transportation revenues or operating budget revenues?
Well,
they're two different budgets.
Two different budgets. Are they discussing this transportation budget during this time also?
So, yeah, okay, that's a good question. So again, two different budgets, but so the transportation budget, you probably saw some things written in the newspaper that a couple weeks ago, Chair Clyburn in the House put forward a transportation package proposal, and in that was kind of a menu of fee increases, some stuff on the MVET, and then the big chunk being ultimately was the 10-cent increase in the gas tax. I say ultimately because I think it ramps up 2 cents a year for 5 years,
yep,
to get you to 10. That package was put out. They did their traditional press conference that they always do for unveiling a budget, but it has still not received a hearing. It still hasn't gone through that public process. It's my opinion, and this is my opinion, that I don't see the legislature's urgency collectively for a transportation budget this year. I know that there was a faction of House Democrats, and it was a pretty large faction, that sent a letter to the Speaker. And when I say large faction, it was a majority of their caucus that sent a letter to the Speaker saying, deal with the operating budget, fund education before we do anything else. Signals from the Senate have been, from the Senate chair of the committee in particular, has made public statements. That Senator King has made public statements about not necessarily seeing that there is the urgency to do a transportation package this year. Your question about whether or not it would go to a public vote, I think it is everyone's, the consensus opinion around here, that there would be a public vote on the transportation revenue package.
In other words, their direction is not necessarily to try to pass a transportation revenue package at the legislature and bypass the voters. Instead, their direction is to propose a ballot measure to the voters so that the voters can decide whether or not they want that transportation package, right?
I feel that is where the legislature is going. And again, this is opinion. Nothing has been put forward publicly in terms of what exactly the plan is, but I do believe that the transportation package is being fashioned in such a way that it would be, the proponents of it are trying to fashion it in such a way that it would be supported by the voters. I don't think it's likely that the legislature itself passes these taxes just here. Then they do not go to the voters with it.
Does the legislature actually have the authority to pass those taxes without voter approval?
Yes, they do. And in some ways, it got easier last week, given the
two-thirds,
the elimination, or the tossing out. I guess that's a very technical legal term. The tossing out of the Iman initiative requiring a two-thirds vote for tax increases. So, you know, you can make the argument that it's gotten easier to raise taxes here in Olympia now. And I think it's a pretty fair argument to make, obviously, that the two-thirds requirement has been removed. In years past, Commissioner Madore, the legislature has done gas tax increases just here in Olympia, and other times they've gone to the ballot. But again, going back to the proposal that's kicking around now, I think consensus is probably too strong of a word, but I think they're leaning towards, or folks are leaning towards putting it out to a public vote, which would be this fall. But again, I don't know that I see that happening right now, especially given that we're going to transition into the operating budget discussion, and you've got this faction's probably a wrong word too, especially when you have a majority of them in the House Democrat caucus that have said, you know, fund the operating budget first. There's an interesting issue then of on the operating budget and whether or not there'll be a tax increase. Mm-hmm. There has been discussion of a B&O surcharge that was levied in the 2011 session. At the end of session, it was kind of an across-the-board B&O increase that was temporary. They adopted it temporarily. It expires here at the end of the 2013 biennium, which is at the end of June. And that B&O hike raised in the neighborhood of $350 million. You may remember the first couple weeks of session, there was a press conference where Governor Inslee in particular had said, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, but he essentially said that extending a current tax is not an increase. So there will be the discussion on the operating side of new revenue. There are certainly folks here that want to do new revenue. There is talk of taking those and putting them on the ballot. Also temporarily increased that year was a beer tax. And a couple other ones along the way. So that's the discussion that will be going on with the operating budget as to which revenue increases they look at. If they do it, the Senate has signaled they're not interested in any new taxes, or even carrying forward the B&O tax that's on the books that is set to expire. So these things will all play out, but a public vote is certainly in play for all of these things.
What about the $450 million that they're considering for the CRC?
Well, that would be part of the transportation package, and if there is no transportation package that is to pass, I don't see an avenue for funding for that, except for if you transition to House Bills 1975 and Senate Bills 5864 on your agenda. Those are the bills that were introduced by Representatives Moeller and Representative Moeller, and I believe Representative Wiley signed on to it as well. And Senator Cleveland, amongst others, authorizing the State Department of Transportation to sell bonds to fund the $450 million of the CRC.
That is so outrageous. We're already spending 67 cents out of every dollar for debt service.
Those bills have not received a hearing, but I know that there was write-ups. I'm sure you saw them in your newspaper about them, so I wanted to add those to the list of things that I'll be paying attention to for you.
So there's nothing scheduled for a hearing yet on those?
There is not.
Okay. I assume that you'll let us know.
Absolutely.
Okay. Why don't you keep going on those, on the crossing project legislation status, as long as we're in the list.
Okay. You remember there were a couple, three or four other bills that were on this list. I've removed those because they did not make it through the required cutoff. So what's left in play is 5088. That's the bill that would essentially eliminate the ability to form the sub-district for C-TRAN. That bill was scheduled to come off the Senate floor yesterday. It was on what we around here call run sheets. They send out sheets, email out sheets of bills that are coming up next.
Mm-hmm.
It appeared on one of those and then was skipped over, and they didn't get back to it. I don't know necessarily what that means. Subsequent to that bill, there were a couple amendments offered by Senator Cleveland, and then again this morning I checked, and a third amendment has now been offered, and it's possible more have shown up. So sometimes bills get skipped over because staff needs to do more work on them, needs to draft more amendments, but I would anticipate that bill coming up for a vote at some point. And then the other one is the House Bill 1288. That is the Mueller bill, essentially dealing with where the steel is purchased and essentially a kind of a buy local type thing.
And that, where is that?
That's on the House floor. It hasn't been voted on yet. They don't send out run sheets the way that the Senate does, but it's made its way all the way to the House floor calendar. I would anticipate that it does get a vote.
Was there a Senate companion for that or no?
There was not.
Okay. So whatever happens, it has to be with that bill, and then it would move over to the Senate, and we'd have a chance to talk about it as it got to committee.
Yes. And then same with Senator Benton's bill 5088.
As if it moved across.
You might want to suggest a new title for Mueller's bill. The price hike for monopoly bill.
Or a buy local bill. We have a different opinion on the value of buy local here, but that's all right.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got those three bills. On the land bank bill, it still has not moved. I don't know that the prime sponsor has a different thought on that bill than she did last week, which we discussed. But I will leave it on the bill until, or on our list there until it's dead. I'm continuing to work on it, and I will continue to talk to the prime sponsor to see if her opinion has changed.
We were going to talk to, so you had mentioned Steve Hornstein, and Axel and I talked about it as well, because he's the one representing the potential the landowners who might have the potential industrial land bank along the railroad. Two questions, I guess. One for Axel. So have you gotten any information as to whether or not we'd be able to, you know, without the extension, because it goes till the end of 2014 without an extension.
Yeah.
What is Hornstein's...
He was real positive about... Steve was positive that they can get that application in, not finished, but vested under the current law by 2014. So he said in terms of their project that he's working on, he thinks they're going to be safe either way, but he did make the point that it's in everybody's best interest, the county's best interest, to try to get the extension, because this law does allow us to get two of these projects on the books, and it would be nice not to lose or waste that second opportunity if we've got another one in hand somewhere out there.
So the second question then is for you, Mike. Is it worth touching? I'm coming up, obviously, this evening. Is it worth touching base with Representative Wiley over the next day or so?
Yeah, why don't we pull her off the floor tomorrow?
All right, cool. Yeah, they're a captive audience. Hopefully she'll come off the floor and we can chat about it.
Depends how many people are out in the rotunda, but yes.
True enough.
She'd probably be happy.
Comfortable shoes, brother. Comfortable shoes out there.
I wear the Echoes for that reason.
Maybe.
Got a question for you. Liz Pike was working on a pilot program for the DOE that would help Clark County with stormwater. Do you know what the status of that is? Wasn't she working directly with the DOE on that?
Yeah, Commissioner, that bill did not pass. But as I understand it, DOE sent you all a letter saying essentially they could do what the bill did without having to have the legislation.
And not just that they could, that they would.
Right. You're right. And that was kind of the tone of the legislation was, it's a lot more to say you can and you will. So we were focused on the will do, and it sounds like through that letter we feel better about that.
Representative Pike was certainly very pleased with the response that she got.
Can we schedule a time for her to call in and for us to be able to talk, learn more about that directly from her?
From Representative Pike?
Yeah.
Dead.
No. Well, the bill's dead, but...
We should talk to Ron Waringo.
They're accomplishing what they need.
We should talk to Ron, because Liz ran the bill and did a great job of doing it. She was working the angles of it, the substance of it. She had people... She had... Housley, Wieringa, Axel, she had a staffer, then there were two people from DOE who actually talked about the details of it. So Liz did a great job of working the bill, but as far as the details of what we can do, Liz isn't the right person to talk with on that.
And I think, commissioners, at this point, the way I'm reading it, the ball is kind of in the county's court to work with ecology and get this thing going. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're right. And I what I would see is maybe working towards a work session with Ron Waringa from Clean Water to talk about how are we going to make what they've committed to happen now. And so we need a plan for getting there.
I guess I see it differently. We're going to count on somebody who abandoned us in court to fix the problem.
This is a new administration, new leadership. I don't know, I'm just saying.
Let me repeat what I just said.
but what DOE said in those meetings was that they agreed with us.
And they actually did.
And they testified in favor of us.
Had they been supportive of the bill, it would have gone to the floor and been voted on and passed.
Yeah.
It didn't.
But Commissioner Mielke, I don't know that I would say they weren't supportive of the bill.
Did they testify in favor of the bill?
They never got in favor, but their testimony was essentially, we could do this. Well, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially is, we could do this. Let's figure out a way to do this. Whereas the other bills, they had public opposition to. So
the environmental committees were the ones.
I mean,
talking to the chair, so it wouldn't get out.
That they have offered, I would say, my advice to you all, if you want it, would be to. I guess I'm going to give it anyway, whether you want it. But my advice would be follow through with them, and you know. Like I said, I think the ball's in your court now to push them, and so push.
Got it. Commissioner?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of two things. One, this was Liz Pike's baby. She championed this, and I want to make sure they give credit where credit is due and also be able to have her encourage her and thank her and really enroll her as much as she wants to help champion it up there in Olympia. That's where DOE is.
The process is now not with the legislature. The
right.
legislative bill is dead.
Right. And yeah, I understand.
It's between us and ecology. But as far as thanking Commissioner, what you want to do as far as thanking Liz, first of all, I did that like the second that we got that. I immediately texted, emailed, Facebook to thank her on that. But as far as something formally, like to actually enroll her and thank her, I think it's a great idea.
Well,
because she really did champion and did a great job.
Yeah, so which is great. Thank you for doing all that. I just want to make sure that we do two things. One, that we recognize her, and two, that we also welcome her to help to be our advocate up there, be able to work more closely with the DOE, or somehow, I expect she may have some opinions in her, some insight that she'd like to be able to, that we can somehow gain that advantage to make sure that we can push this through.
I think, Commissioners, if you all do get a work session scheduled, you know, clearly, obviously you can communicate to her through me. I see her almost daily, talk to her almost daily. Or we can, maybe the board wants to draft her a letter saying this is what we've decided to do if in fact you do have this work session, to keep her in the loop. I think that's a good idea.
Keep her in the
because
loop.
You do want to keep that door open with her to give that input to ecology. But again, I think you're at the point now where you've got to get something moving so we have something for her to work forward with as well.
Yeah, and you'll, as we get going on this work session, you'll realize how complex this is going to be, because there's cost involved with the pilot program. There's also legal issues that Chris Cook's going to have to explain, because we still do have our legal case, and so it's going to be a complex program to work out.
So and Commissioners, I only took that off the list because it's not an active piece of legislation. It doesn't mean that. You know, I still won't work on the issue if you all provide me direction to go do that. It's just there's not a bill that I'm working on that one, so that's why it's not there.
No, yeah, understood.
It's not really Mike's role to do that. I just wanted to see what he knew. And basically what would come out of this is to keep her in the loop on this.
That is well said. Absolutely. All right. Keep going, Mike.
And then lastly, you have got the WASAC document. And this is just their standard legislative priorities bill, or priorities document. You know, associations, everybody does these things.
Flip the last page. I'm going to have them flip the last
over,
page.
You've kind of got here a consolidated list of, so on the front side you have the agenda, and on the top you have the actual bills that are part of the WASAC agenda.
And just so they know, so the legislative priorities, we actually, we spend 2 hours on the Hill. Every legislative steering committee meeting ends at 10 a.m. From 10 to noon, we go to the Hill. We talk to legislators. We leave them with the legislative priorities. We don't leave them with the helpful and harmful bills, because that's, you know, something that the counties, you know, keep for all of the members to be able to use. So we use that information, but we leave them the legislative priorities, so they have that. We leave them a one-pager. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
And so within this list, you see, you know, the public records issue we've talked about is 1128. I have not brought every single bill to you all that is on this list, only because of the volume of things, and we'd spend hours and hours on the phone if we did that. So, again, there are certain things that that I'm sure you're looking at all these numbers and a little overwhelmed by all these titles and things like this, but these are all bills, for the most part, I'm familiar with every one of these bills, and I do think that WASAC's sorting of these into helpful and harmful is accurate. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, the bills that are helpful save you money or make it easier for to do what you all want to do at the local level, and the harmful bills cost you money.
Yeah, they're unfunded mandates.
Exactly, and you know, in particular, when you look at the harm bill, the same day voter registration. That's House Bill 1267, and Senate version is 5268. WASAC a lot of times doesn't necessarily have a problem with the policy; it's the cost that's incurred.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may see some here just by looking at the title that you think are good ideas, but at the end of the day, WASAC is there to help, you know, protect you from a financial standpoint and those responsibilities you have to your constituents to maintain your budgets properly.
Yeah, like requiring a notice to property owners when we modify our zoning requirements. I mean, that's kind of a cool policy, but very, very expensive.
Right. There's a few that we have talked about as I was going through the list. We talked about in the helpful bill category. 1538 was one of the bills that Mr. Wiesman had brought forward to you all that we talked about a month or so ago. The veterans levy we discussed, that's next to the bottom. The admissibility of a civil action, failing to wear your safety belt, that kind of fits, actually jumping all the way back up to Senate Bill 5803. Senate Bill 5803 is the big tort reform bill. Then switching back down to that safety belt one, that'd be a smaller component of that. Again, I've heard through Bill and others, I believe probably bills that from your risk management folks, am I saying that properly?
Correct.
That these are bills that would could save you money, I assume, on insurance policies and things like that, and then claims against you. I just wanted to give you that idea that these are out there. Axel, in particular, you asked me about House Bill 1627, the competency mm-hmm. evaluations.
Yeah, that kind of, I didn't know if that was going to push it back on us as a cost or not. I was trying to evaluate that.
And I don't believe it does.
It doesn't.
But if someone there thinks it does, they should let me know.
No, we talked about 1627 a lot at Ledge Steering last time, and what it does is it establishes, Pierce County really wanted it, and it actually, every county then would be, instead of sending someone up to Western States or having someone come down from Western States, they could actually have a professional from in the area do the evaluation. Save the money of the transport back and forth, save the money of having the professionals come down or go up, and then the state reimburses the cost of doing that. For every one of those assessments, evaluations that would be done by that county specifically, that frees up space and time for the people who do the evaluations from Western States because they're behind. So there is no cost shift to the counties. It would actually be a reimbursed.
Cool. This list is a work in progress. I know there are already some bills that have died that will be updated by the time your legislative committee meeting is obviously tomorrow morning, so I believe the staff will have an updated list for you then. But again, I think it was more for Commissioners Madore and Milkey to get kind of an idea about some of the bigger global stuff that's not Clark County specific.
Hey, Mike, does that 1073, the very top one and helpful, does that have any chance? That's an interesting concept because the feds do that for federal lands.
It does, Axel, but it's expensive.
Yeah,
right.
No,
so, that's and again, a lot
awesome.
Of these things on the helpful bills to us cost the state money.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
There's, you know, going back to the whole budget issue. What I don't see that's on here, and I don't know if I'm missing it, is that one I believe we talked about last week about the getting the Medicaid rate for your inmates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that necessarily isn't a general fund hit, but it's a chunk of change, as I understand it, to the hospitals. And so they have opposition to that. And, you know, just like everything around here, the stuff that's the hardest is normally the stuff that costs money.
Mm-hmm.
Mike? Somebody's paying for it or you're taking it away from somebody. So,
hold on, Mike. Mike, hold on.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, as I look over all this list of bills, I keep wondering, here we got a brand new legislative session, and we're facing a jobs crisis, and the whole state's facing a jobs crisis, and I'm trying to identify one bill here that addresses that. Where in the world are their priorities? Don't they realize we have a jobs crisis in our state? All I see here is increasing taxes, increasing regulation, making it more difficult, and the way they want to extend
more taxes into the future, it seems exactly backwards in the direction we ought to go. Why aren't they focusing on addressing our crisis?
Well, and Commissioner, you know, there are a number of other bills floating around. This is just, this list you're looking at are specific issues to your capacity in running your county and making it easier to do that or stopping it from becoming harder. That's what this list focuses on. There are other jobs measures out there, economic development things that are going around. But again, this is more of a specific internal WASAC list. You know, if it'd be helpful for you to find some of those, I can look around at some of those and maybe get, you know, email something to you that's more particular on that. So just because those things aren't on this list doesn't mean they're not happening.
Agreed. Mike?
Yes.
Why don't you go to AWB and ask them to give you their list of, you know, if they have their bill list, which I'm sure they do. See if they'll give us a copy of that and email that over to us, because Association of Washington Businesses would be tracking that specifically for the business community, so we should be able to get a good and bad bill list from them as well.
Okay, well, I'm thinking, though, that, Mike, you're a lobbyist up there, that if it's not on your list, it means if there are some significant bills out there that will address our jobs crisis, we need to add it to your list to make sure you help champion that. If there are bills out there that are doing the exact opposite, we'll make sure we enroll your help to squash that, right?
Absolutely. If that's the direction the board wants me to do, I will do that.
Well, if we want to address it, that's the number one thing that we can't address it at, if you're not addressing it at the state level.
Well,
so,
just to be clear here, the Industrial Land Banks bill is jobs, purely. I mean, that is a jobs bill for us. That's why we want it to get done. I mean, and you've talked about, you know, how we could, you know, we should be laying the foundation for those jobs, and we should need to look at getting creative for that. That's a jobs bill.
Which number are you
actually
at?
All three of our top priorities are
jobs bill. So the industrial, that's 1360 on the front there. We have the bill on stormwater. The stormwaters bill, absolutely a jobs bill. And you can talk to our business community about the impact to jobs.
What number is that?
That's the one that's now that we have to work out with ecology, and we had two other bills that died. Exactly. But those bills, all about jobs.
Our money for infrastructure died.
The money for infrastructure, our sales tax for economic development all
died.
About jobs. So those died. Were our priorities died. Were
yeah.
absolutely about jobs. Doesn't mean the bills are going to pass, but absolutely our focus has, you know, that was our focus for our priority legislation.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Like, let's get the list from AWB, see what's still alive as far as pro and con jobs bills, and then let us take a look at it and see if, as a board, there are things that we really want you to get up there and champion to help either help with job creation or laying the foundation for jobs or bills that might hurt job creation.
Without a doubt, commissioners, I can go find the economic development bills that are still in play. And I'm happy to do that if that's what my direction is.
Yes, that's your direction.
This is the first time we've really had this part of the discussion, so give me a chance to get that list collected and we'll go from there.
That sounds great, Mike. Thank you. What else you got?
That's it for me.
All right. Commissioner Milky has some.
I've been trying to follow and understand the Mueller bill on property tax. It allows it to be done electronically, and then there's a fee. And so I'm not sure if you can answer my question or not. I heard it's still alive because it's Mueller's bill, but it's one that we don't necessarily need to pay our property taxes in partial state.
Do you have a bill number?
Are you sure it's a Mueller bill?
Yeah.
I can look it up. I'm going to his bill page to see what bills he sponsored to see if it's there.
He was working with Doug Lasher on it.
Yeah, it's the monthly property tax payment bill.
Okay, hold on just a sec here, and I'll see if
I have it in my office.
And the reason I was confused about it was because we can already do it, but the legislation that was encouraged from Doug Lasher was to do it electronically and then charge the people to do it electronically. And I'm not sure if his intent was to only do it electronically and not allow it to be paid in person.
I'm looking through his property tax payments. The bill has made it to the Rules Committee.
So it's sitting in Rules right now?
Has it been pulled at all?
No, it's still sitting in the Rules Committee. Authorizes the county authority to accept payments of past due property taxes, penalties, and interest by electronic funds transfer on a monthly basis.
So this is just for past due?
And then I authorize the county treasurer to assess and collect tax foreclosure avoidance costs and delinquent collection charges on past due real estate and personal property. So based on the bill summary, yes, it is just past due.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Am I hearing we don't care for this?
No, it's better than nothing. I wanted to make sure that I understood it correctly, that it didn't remove the ability that we have today to pay it in person.
Oh, your concern was that they would have to pay it electronically?
Right.
Okay, I'll read through the bill and make sure that's not the case. And can I shoot you an email back?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, excellent. Anything else? Did you have anything else?
No, I'm not sure.
All right, Mike, did you have anything else?
I do not.
All right, thanks for all your work up there. We'll look for an update from you. I'll talk with you tomorrow morning at WASAC.
Right, and then next week we'll have the jobs, economic stuff, and it'll be a good time because some of this stuff will have funneled down again between now and then.
So. Perfect. Excellent. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Good point. We can definitely get, especially now that bills have windowed down a little bit, it's a good time to focus in on the other. There are economic development bills that have, that are either good or bad, that have a chance of passing. Now is a good time to see that, because all of the kind of the noise is gone from, a lot of the noise is gone from the legislation, because all of the hero bills that had no chance are gone. Tom's left for a second. I thought we were, oh, is this the last minutes that you're asking us to approve?
Yeah.
Oh, where are they?
The recordings are on the web.
Okay. So this was the one for February 20th, so we already had, that one was from last. Thank you. And I got this, but I don't remember seeing anything that looked out of whack, but.
And the recording from last week's meeting is on the web.
Oh, I did want to add, there was a sentence, I had them at the end of the bottom, where it said there may well be authority, because there was the question, there was language about what authority we did not have. I wanted to make sure that there was a memorialization of that there may well be authority.
Authority for what?
The advisory bill. It's the last sentence of that paragraph.
Oh. There may well be authority if the question, authority, in other words, we do have the authority.
If the question's tailored.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. In other words, that's good. Thank you for that.
Of course.
Okay, what are you looking at?
Oh, he's brought
a chocolate.
Is that bribes in it?
I think it was, yeah. It's working.
I think
for
it was. It's all good, though. Yeah. It all looks fine to me as far as the minutes themselves. Any changes you want to make?
What are you looking at?
The minutes. From last.
No change.
Yeah.
So you sent this electronically ahead of time?
I gave it to you last week, yeah.
Yeah. He handed it to us at the meeting.
I'm so guilty. Okay. Well,
I
forfeit the opportunity to focus and to correct when I delay. And
all right. So moved. All right. We're good on that then. Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Chris, where's Chris at?
He's not here yet, so I guess we skipped to 3.2, 3.3, okay. And 3.4.
So CRC advisory votes. Commissioner Milky, your request to come back and talk about that.
Yeah.
We don't stick the microphone.
And I haven't worked on it. We had a sample and we talked. Who did I talk to you about it?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about taking my last paragraph first.
Good question.
Well, here it is. So, on the second page, we thought the last paragraph should go first in that proposed verbiage.
Oh, on the advisory vote?
Turned over in the wrong place. There you go.
Oh, okay. Actually, I think it's way premature for us to actually work on verbiage of this. We do have time. and this is something we need to carefully think through. I haven't had a chance.
I gave you a week.
It's going to take a month. Now,
we got one more week.
Yeah, more than a week. Are you just giving him another week?
I don't want to wait until the last minute.
No, I don't want to wait until the last minute either, but...
I mean, that's how big you want it. No bigger than that.
I would just say that the voters are getting a really good deal for the amount of time I'm putting in. And I'm doing everything I can to get all the important stuff done. And I'm hitting the most important stuff first, the urgent, most urgent first, and then the little bit less urgent next. And this is important, and it hasn't quite got there yet.
What's more important than a vote of the people? I'm joking. You need a little more time to think of language.
It is so important that we take the time to really get it right.
Well, so we're going to give him some more time for him to get up to speed.
This is the November election, so it's like August. It's March.
All right, we're coming back next week, then. We'll discuss it and see where you're at next week.
We can discuss it, but we have until August, and I'm not going to make anywhere near then to be able to get there, but we want to make sure we do take the time to get this right. And I don't want to rush it, but I don't want to delay it. So we got time to really, really think it through.
You're delaying it.
All right.
I'll reverse it and let you look at it.
Okay.
I'll give you a draft more than welcome.
Okay. All right, so we'll come back to that then. Okay. Commissioner Mielke, the prayer at weekly board meetings.
Oh, okay. I need another week. Really, I wanted to show examples of that, and I do have videos of that. And then we also, I think, have legal here for that.
Right. And did you prepare a memo or something for us, or what have you done as far as research?
I haven't had time to do a memo, but I've done the research, and I can tell you.
If we came back next week, would you have time to have prepared a memo for us so that we have something in writing to be able to... look at and
there's an article. Need another week also. Huh?
There's an article in the paper today about it, about the city of Longview sort of changing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So sure, I mean, if you'd like something in writing,
is that okay with you? And then we can come back and show us what you're thinking.
I was going to invite a guest to do some more explanations. Also, who's been involved in it before, I understand. Okay. And then I was also looking for stuff from the speakers. Office up in Olympia as to what kind of guidelines that they follow.
Okay. So, to be continued?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Need another week.
That's okay.
Okay.
All right. CREDC letter and invoice. Bill, I thought we already dealt with this.
Actually, I've got some input on that.
We have some input. Okay. Yeah.
Did you have something you want to share first, Bill?
The legal has an input, yeah. What the acceptance or non-acceptance of this invoice does.
All right. Legal
the contract.
So it's a pretty straightforward contract that we have with Credit. Essentially says that upon receipt of an invoice in the first quarter of 2013 and 2014, we pay $100,000. The only provision for non-payment is if they're in default under the contract. There's no claim that they are. So at this point, under the contract, the money's owed. If we don't pay it, we're in default of the contract.
As of when?
Contract question.
Well, it says upon receipt.
March 29th. It's due March 29th.
Okay. Commissioner Mielke, go ahead.
So we sent them the letter before they sent us the invoice.
Right.
Will that carry any weight?
I don't believe so. I mean,
so basically what we told them in the letter that you violated our position. And therefore, we don't want to be invoiced. That's kind of what I summed it up as to being. And then they waited for some time after that, a week or two, and then they sent us the invoice. So, and my concern was, they're kind of putting the, we got the cart ahead of the horse. Then they come along with the horse and.
Well, the contract charges them with doing certain work. And it doesn't make taking positions or not taking positions on issues a condition of the contract. So unless you can say they haven't done the work that is set out in the contract, you don't have a reason to not pay them.
That'd be worth, that would be worth reviewing.
Well, the letter actually instructed them don't do the work because that wasn't for past work, it was for future work.
Well,
and so we've notified them don't do the work because we don't have an intention to pay you because in our eyes you are not accomplishing what your core mission is, you're violating your core mission. So what I would suggest is in the future that any contract that we have with an agency or body like that gives a couple of provisions that allows us to be able to continue to be responsible and provide an escape that says, first of all, if you if that body does something that violates our core mission or their core mission, that we have an escape that we can say discontinue work and we're not locked in to continue to fund you to do something that goes against our own policies. So that would be one. And so in other words, there's nothing in here. So that's a glaring flaw in there. But I do have more to share when after I listen.
I take issue with that being a glaring flaw. It's tough to contract with people and say, well, if you
disagree
in our opinion,
with me,
support our policies, we're going to terminate our contract.
Well,
you.
We don't have to be that specific. We can say if either party elects within a certain period of time to discontinue the contract, we have the freedom to do so. We don't have, for no fault. We don't have this.
We do that in some contracts, have a termination provision that says that either side can terminate out.
So we can add.
Whether that's acceptable to either party depends to some extent on how dependent they are for if they're going to go out and hire people to do the work.
Sure. And it would assume that, of course, that would be the exception. It wouldn't normally be something that would come into play. It just right now there's nothing. One end of the stream, there's no provision. They could go off and just do everything horrible, and the contract says, "Sorry, you can't do anything about it. Keep paying them for that service." Certainly, that's not good. The other is to specify for this and this and this reason, which is also not good. Just simply to allow a provision for in the future, some escape that leaves the door open in case there is a desire to do so.
Well, and there is a termination clause. I mean, there are termination clauses within there specifically if they don't perform the work.
Correct.
But the work was what was contemplated within the contract, the work to actually help bring jobs. Mm-hmm. So the interpretation, well, and the interpretation of that piece of it, that's where I think you're seeing a missing piece that you probably want to get addressed.
Exactly.
But you had more. You had other stuff.
Yes, I actually, first of all, I don't want to cut your feedback short.
No.
Is that okay? All right. First of all, I want to make sure that we don't get misunderstood regarding our relationship with the CEDC. And it is a relationship. A relationship is broken right now. And the CEDC has done a lot of good things, and they're continuing to do a lot of good things. They're helping the city of Camas to land some potential, some very big businesses in there. Mm-hmm. That's good. We don't have any argument with that. But at the same time, they have taken a stand on a very divisive issue in our county, and that was I consider that to be where they've gone wrong. What I would like to be able to do is invite them, and I'll take the initiative on this because I was the instigator to try to, you know, that really ended up breaking this relationship, to try to heal this relationship. Originally, my goal was to get them to. Since they have been writing letters urging our state legislature and governor to fund this project, my original intent was to not reinstate anything with them unless they say, don't fund this project, take a stand against that. What I'd like to be able to do is find a common ground and a middle ground with them and say, if you will just simply back away from taking a position on this and just return to neutrality, move away from the very divisive issue, and return to your core mission of focus on bringing jobs to our community, then we can entertain a new contract with them that provides a typical escape hatch. But I wouldn't reinstate it at $100,000. I would reinstate it at $10,000 per year. Yeah, it would enough for us to be able to engage with them with the because it is very important that we build relationships and that we communicate with them. We have some differences, and we have not only differences, but we also have collaboration that can happen on this in order to make sure that we're successful. They should be the first one coming to the county and saying, make yourself more saleable by not taking the cash from the job creators and giving it to us to create jobs. Instead, they should be the ones saying, keep that cash in the hands of the job creators and we'll help, and that way you become more marketable. I think that communication can to be on the executive board with them. I hope that they would welcome our feedback on that in order to do that.
Okay, David, we're getting off the legal question that we asked him.
True.
And what you're saying is something that we need to have a meeting. I think you're the liaison, or you're the liaison.
Yes.
They need to take it to the meeting and explain that to them.
I would be happy to. But what I thought I'd do, though, because this is not something that's just me, this is board time that really involves all of us.
We were talking about where we are legally, and that's reason they're here.
Well, that really, you're right in that your role in this, Bronson, was to advise us legally. But I took the opportunity here to talk about healing the relationship with the CREC organization.
I saw that too. I saw that soapbox.
So, in the bottom line, I would be very happy to, if I have your support, fellow commissioners, to go meet with them, see what we can do to heal that relationship so that we're not taking taxpayer money and having them advocate for something that taxpayers say.
Absolutely, but I want you to know that we've already spent $100,000 on parking.
and for me, I'm all about, yeah, exactly, spending money three times.
That's why
too late.
Reaching out and trying to heal the relationship is a great idea. I don't personally see breaching the contract, offering to reinstate it at a tenth of what they had before, and asking them at the same time to back away from the biggest job creating project, and by job creating I mean the biggest project to lay the foundation for jobs in our region. I don't necessarily see that as a path to success to heal the relationship. I think it's great to have the conversation, and I think that you reaching out to them is wonderful.
I think
and I don't know what it'll do. I mean, that's something that I think it's great to reach out to.
And it is not opinion, but it is fact that they are also advocating and urging funding for the greatest job-killing project in our history, and
that's
that is
not
a fact.
Thompson
Metal Fab, there's four businesses.
Yeah, and there's like 400 businesses that rely on the project moving forward.
That's an opinion.
No, that's fact.
Okay.
That's absolutely
okay.
Fact.
Well, certainly
I don't
we can
deal
be,
with
well,
opinion and conjecture.
See the vision that we have here is what they don't have to deal with if they say we're just going to be neutral on this, and that way they can focus on bringing businesses to this area.
We got the soapbox. You had two votes to go.
All in favor.
You taking your soapbox and setting it up in front of the CREC office and preaching.
I'm with him.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. So let's get back to the actual question of the day, which is us breaching the contract.
So March 29th, bills due, payable, don't pay it, we're in default.
Okay.
Right.
My gut feeling is that they said they weren't interested in that, but they could.
They could. They have said they're not.
And I, think.
So is there an action that you're requesting from us, or just you're just kind of informing us?
I got the invoice. A question. I gave you an answer.
Okay. Yeah.
And I assume I'll hold
so
the invoice.
Their public relations decision is not to sue the county. Their biggest customer. Okay.
May I assume I continue to hold the invoice?
Does it not pay it?
It will not be that contract, because that contract has no provision
for escape. I simply ask for hold the invoice.
In
until
round
the 29th.
File on the floor is fine.
Yeah, I used to just hold it. In. And it's for another. We'll look at it again next week.
I already said my piece a while ago.
In other words,
is
there a possibility that we'll just simply pay that invoice as in that contract as it is? I would say absolutely not.
I might sneak it. I might sneak
you
it through.
All right. So you have your direction on that. We don't need to restate our position.
Don't go.
Okay. Well. Let's. I'd like to wrap this up. That contract is fatally flawed. That there's absolutely no escape provision whatsoever.
Okay. There is,
so I would say
there is an escape provision. Don't
well,
mix facts,
Mr. Attorney.
Well,
on our side, sure on our side,
if there's a default, if they don't do what the contract says, so then we can terminate.
Right.
So I don't know if you want to call that an escape provision.
Okay. Then I would say that we have legal standing, and that they are not doing what the contract says, because their contract says to build jobs, and they are in fact killing jobs. So we have legal standing.
Well, we don't know. That's something we have to argue.
Actually, no. That is a fact.
I'm afraid we might get our own.
Talk to those poor businesses. They will vouch for that. Hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of jobs.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's an argument point. We got it.
Yeah.
I have a different subject.
Okay. Good.
Kind
of. Glad to hear.
We talked about, and we keep forgetting about, the city of Vancouver continues to waiver property taxes for different types of construction. And we get 15% of that property tax, I believe.
No, sales tax.
Sales tax?
15% of the sales tax.
We don't get anything off the property tax?
We get every parcel. We get 100% off every parcel. Yeah.
Well, we collect it for much of it for them.
There's a program. I know what you... Go ahead. I know that there's another bill right now to run.
Where I'm going with this is that they're giving away our money.
Yeah.
The money belongs to us, and how can they do that?
And it's urban redevelopment. And I have the statute, if you want to go over.
So they use a statute?
There's a statute that allows them to incentivize urban redevelopment by giving a rebate or a credit to the developer, a portion of which the giveaway is we would receive. And so, yeah, I don't even think there's a notification requirement in the RCW. Yeah. But it is law. It is legal.
That's where Levitt lives.
Well,
and it is an issue.
That's the first building that they use.
I researched it when Carolyn Crane brought it up. Carolyn Crane brought it up a while ago, and I did all the research on it and worked with her on it a little bit.
So I'm looking to recoup some of our money. I mean, I can see it. I can see it. I thought they got that, and we got 15%.
That's the
sales
tax.
That was basically used for our judicial system.
But that's the sales tax is the 15%. That's the one that we get 15% of.
Oh, okay.
But the property tax, yeah, we do lose revenue based on those abatements.
Yeah, the property taxes goes to schools, goes to law enforcement, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it seems the case in particular where they knocked down the Burgerville and they're building this high density, super density apartment complex or condo complex, which maximizes all the transportation infrastructure and police and school, you name it. It's that if you ever had a development project that maximized that's that. And yet they're giving away the taxes that would support all the infrastructure, which to me seems completely backwards. Don't we have any recourse at all?
The authority to collect those taxes is granted by the legislature, and if the legislature has also given the authority to try and incentivize things or forgive taxes or waive taxes, I mean, sounds like Axel's looked at this.
Yep.
And
we don't have any recourse unless we put it on our legislative agenda. And in fact, there is a bill to do another incentive program similar like this, and our comment through WASAC and with Mike has been, hey, we've already been dealing with one of these kind of statutes. We sure would like to know when you're going to give up our portion of some revenue, and we've been fighting kind of that bill. Oh. And that was a Washington Association of Cities bill to do another kind of incentive program. So we're aware of it. The short answer is no. We don't have any recourse other than to write to the city and talk.
Why would the city want to come to us for permission?
They wouldn't. WASAC's telling them
they don't
have to write the bill.
But that's what we're saying. WASAC is saying they should have to. If you're giving up our revenue, it's a WASAC. The county, the cities want the bill. WASAC is saying, well, shouldn't we be able to have to sign off on that before you start giving away money? So
we don't have to?
No.
Nope.
No provision?
No.
Well, that is odd because in Oregon, with something like an enterprise zone, every taxing district actually does have to sign off on it.
For some of their
in an enterprise zone.
Right, for an enterprise zone. But they have other tax incentives that don't have that.
Okay. We do have new city council races coming up here that could change that.
Well, and then think of it this way. From a policy perspective, it's not always bad. The city's probably going to come up with some of these projects that they want to incentivize that you guys would really like and well, think are a good idea.
And the reality
and that
is
fine. And it's only when we disagree.
And the reality is that as much as, and you've said it a few times, and we'll get you information, the whole, like, that somehow an urban style development taxes to the max the infrastructure, the numbers don't bear that out on transportation. They just don't. I mean, it is absolutely backwards from that. And we'll show you, and so that you can stop saying that over and over again, because it really is different than what you when what you would think for transportation, for schools and the otherwise. We go sideways real quick.
In,
but
in other words, you have an opinion that differs than mine.
It's not an opinion. This is also fact. I'll show you the numbers.
If I can have facts, we'll both have
no,
facts.
I'll show you numbers. I'll show you. You're basing it on an opinion. I'll give you facts. Because I've dealt with this for a long time. So,
but under the statute, in order to do this, they have to first declare a zone where they want to incentivize urban renewal, and then they declare project. So right. There are steps where we can become aware of it, but I don't right. think they have.
And the question is there added tax revenue that's associated with those projects that wouldn't occur otherwise? And so there's certainly, and that's opinion. That definitely is an opinion of would it happen if you didn't have incentives to actually bring it, and that's definitely opinion. I would never say that's fact. People have different opinions on that. All right. Anything else for Bronson?
No.
Thank you, Bronson.
See you next week.
Thank
Sounds
you.
Good. All right.
Back to 3.1.
That was CREDC. No.
You got
oh,
Chris
well, yeah, we have Chris, yeah. Chris, what you got for us?
You asked me for a more
I have two.
No. Close to the Thank view you. Of the Open Meetings Act, and what I tried to do is because there are so few cases in the state of Washington, I tried to do research throughout the country and get examples of, remember, there's a couple key components to when you kick in the Open Meetings Act. One is whether you're a quorum. Two is if you're in a meeting, and that really hinges on whether you're taking action. And so what I tried to do is look at what kinds of things constitute action, and I provided those for you within the context of your matrix. I tried to use the matrix as a simple way of saying when you're in or out, so we can continue with that, but also look at cases from other states that have similar statutes to give you an idea of how you can apply this on concrete examples without actually having cases from the state of Washington. It's the closest I could come to give you exactly what you were asking for without, you know, without actually having the law here in this state.
So is this the memo that we'd already seen?
No, this is your increased matrix. Your enhancement.
Okay. What I had specifically asked for the third time now is I specifically asked for, there are lots of different actions that we take, right? Land use, zoning, quasi-judicial, resolutions. There are lots of things we do as commissioners, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For every one of those, there is a different level of responsibility for public involvement. Some of them statutory, some of them by policy, right?
Sure,
that's what I want a grid of. I want a grid of to be able to show so that people can all be on the same page that when people say to me, they say, well, how could you possibly have done that in board time? I can say, look, there's you know, this isn't a quasi-judicial action that was taken. This is something that was this type of action, and this level of public involvement is required, and this is where the gray area exists for public involvement.
So it's not an open meeting question
no.
you have.
No.
It's more just meeting process for different types of actions and public involvement plus or minus.
Exactly. I mean, and when does the Planning Commission, is the Planning Commission, you know, is it something that we have to send to the Planning Commission or not?
Okay.
You know, for different types of actions we take because there are so many. So it gets confused really quick where people expect that the same level of process is required for every type of action that we take, and that's not true. So that's the grid. That's
sorry,
what I'm looking for. That's okay.
Okay.
That's okay. That's
but
what I'm looking for.
Actually, I think, Chris, that you are right. We were looking for clarification to keep us out of trouble from having a forum.
That's true, too. That's true, too.
So yeah. you were right, Chris. It was just a two-part.
You're just somewhat.
It was a two-part. You're right.
Well,
absolutely.
We can probably get one clear answer out of that grid, just simply that one clear answer that prompted this whole conversation in the first place, if I understand that. and that is, what freedom do we have during board time? Can we make decisions short of something that requires a formal, like 10-day public notice? Do we have less freedom here than we do out there in the regular in the hearing room?
You mean to take action?
Yeah, to make decisions.
Let me give you an easy example. Administrative decisions that affect staff, the how you operate the county internally, like employees, signing contracts, those can be taken as equally, as well in a work session as they can out during consent, if you chose to. So if you wanted additional input in one of your work sessions on a contract, we could do that here, because you're in an open public meeting, that's all that is required. Where you come into play with public hearing, the kinds of things that you're also asking me to do, or that you wanted, and I guess I didn't understand, are police power actions, for example. Those are the kinds of things that require notice. Any land use actions fit in that same category, adoption of ordinances, those kinds of things require public notice, and we would have to be out there in an open public, not only in a public meeting, but in a public hearing where the public is given advance notice and given the right to testify. So I certainly can do
those two.
I'm sorry?
Somewhere between those two. Because I don't think we're not really, at this point, focusing on the more public notice.
But Commissioner Stewart wants that too. I mean,
we want to include that. But the question today has to do with one bar less than that, than what we would normally decide out there. That doesn't require the 10-day formal public hearing and notice. Do we have that freedom here on this side of the wall to make decisions like we would out there?
Depends
on
the type of
decision. In many cases, the answer is yes.
Yeah, but it depends on the type of decision, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are there particular limitations?
Well,
that's what I'm getting to.
Okay.
So that's exactly what I'm trying to get.
Clarification.
Exactly.
Great.
That's what I'm trying to get.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Chris. So one question answered, one question still to go. Thank you for providing us with this. Very much appreciated. Sorry for the miscommunication on that.
No, that's no problem. Actually, what you asked and what I did, what you asked is probably a lot simpler than what I did. So.
I'm sorry.
No.
But this is good, too.
Thanks,
Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. On to new business.
Yeah, he is one great attorney.
He really is. Yeah. We're blessed. We have some good attorneys.
Yeah, Bronson, too.
Money. All right. Bill, we'll start with you.
I have our stuff, nothing new for me.
Kelly.
Oh, policy issues.
Wow. All right. Mary.
Yes, I need
wait. That's not new business. New business comes from you guys. The staff stuff is down to the last thing. You guys are first. That's why we've always had
to
it.
You. I'm joking. Here, we'll get some chocolate over there.
A little sugar.
I will absolutely. Commissioner Milky, do you have anything?
I do.
All right.
We talked roughly about the Fairfax decision. Back east, and how it would affect stormwater.
Oh, yeah. The one that stormwater is not a pollutant under the Clean Water Act. Yeah.
We talked about that, and someone said it did not or could apply to us. Do you remember?
It's unsettled law. It's a district court case, and so it doesn't actually it's not setting precedent yet, but it will be, as it gets run up the federal flagpole, then it could.
Okay.
That's where it's at.
Another item on the request of Bill. I'm looking to get an idea of how we can use Con Futures maintenance and operation dollars and where we might be able to use those and in what parks. For example, old growth repairing areas and trails might qualify. I'm trying to think who brought this back to us before.
Well, we are using the 15% part to fund Pat Lee's position and some of the projects that they're doing. The 15%, we're allowed to use 15% for operations and maintenance. We're doing that now.
Are you looking for a breakdown of what we're using it for and how we might?
I'm looking for available dollars that we might have for maintenance and operation of our parks.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. And so you want to get a breakdown of the contributors on O&M right now and see if there's...
Yeah, so are we using all of the 15%?
I don't know, sir. I'll ask.
Okay,
you're asking for a different use of the money, though. You're asking, can 15% operations and maintenance money be used to maintain parks?
Yeah, we did find out before.
Not con futures land, but parks.
Yeah, we did find out before we could do that.
Yeah, if it's open space, if it's part of...
Like that new park we have up there, the 80 acres of old growth.
Well, and the question is how, and this is, I think, what we should figure out, is there a limitation on the O&M funding? Because I don't know this. A limitation that says that you can only do O&M on lands that were purchased with con futures money?
No. We already had that answer back.
I don't know if we did. I didn't hear it. I mean, I haven't heard back.
For example, when we got that state land, there was out in Camas, we got one out there, got this one here.
Yep.
Legal came back to us at that time and said, yes, we can use it for that. It had to meet those criteria in the definition of con futures dollars. It didn't have to be just con futures land. It could be in any riparian, old growth, et cetera. And what I'm looking for was money. And Bill kind of answered that, maintenance and operation. So we're using that for operation, Pat Lee's wages.
But that's, a very small part. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm wondering, and then I'm sure we're using it for regular maintenance. I was just wondering how much money we had to play with to help our parks.
All right.
Cool.
Good. I'm not going to ask you about the regular question.
Surveying.
Which way were we crossing?
Quiet zone project.
Did we make a formal request of staff to take the, I thought that we might have, to take the information we had from the hearings examiner that ruled against the kennels on noise? We thought that some of the stuff that was presented and the ruling from the hearings examiner, that we asked legal and our staff to tell us what we have to do to change our ordinance so that we can have legal kennels.
I talked to Marty earlier this week, not an official meeting, but he kind of came in while I was having another meeting, and we talked about it a little bit. And we can get him to write it up, though, because, he had definitely said, there's some things we may have to address, primarily around the performance standards associated with it, because the noise standard piece of it is pretty straightforward. There's a state standard for noise.
I think that's the part that failed. And one of the things that they requested of him one time, as hearings examiner did the first time, was go do a noise study. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure what that was. I think it was going to cost him another $3,000. And he said, he didn't think he could do that. He just thought he could just go down there, put in all the requirements, three-stage buffers and the double fences.
Well, exactly, and that's the problem. And those are performance standards. So those performance standards didn't seem to be enough for the hearings examiner to say, okay, well, if you do those things, you're going to be meeting the state noise standard that's required. I know we can get Marty to write it up, but I know Yuri also hired James Housley to help him out with that, too.
Oh, he did. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to him since.
Yeah, I talked to Housley 2 days
meeting,
ago.
We have a staff meeting to review that decision. Marty, it's on the books. So, and that was the thing, was that the burden, the hearing examiner put the burden of proof on the applicant to show that it's not going to breach the noise ordinance, and found that, I think, that he was unable to meet that burden of proof.
So
and left him the opportunity to come back and try to prove it
again. For the purposes of what Commissioner Mielke's asked, can we get a write-up from that staff meeting so that we all have it and are on the same page with what your guys' interpretation is on what would need to happen? Please.
And that's all I have here.
Did you want to do the Hendrickson thing now?
What?
Ron Hendrickson's reinstatement.
Okay.
I can call Francine.
We can do that. Okay, you can call her up.
Do you have anything else?
unless you're all good at Commissioner Medora while we're waiting for
go ahead.
Francine.
Yeah, that's good.
Commissioner Medora, what do you have?
Well, I'll wait so we can all participate here.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure. We're talking about personnel. We can go to an executive session for that. Could we be an executive session?
No, we can't.
Talk about
we can't.
Disciplinary on employee?
No, sir. I asked.
Okay. So did you get a hold of Francine?
Yes.
Okay. So she's on her way, but go ahead, Commissioner, okay. And then when she gets here, we can come right back around.
Good. A while ago, we gave a green light to hire a railroad coordinator. What's the status of that?
Do you have an update, Commissioner?
I haven't made my phone call this week.
Oh. So we are still waiting on
it? For a week. It's been approved to fill the vacancy. The three of you approved it. You asked me to go to Commissioner Mielke with your two opinions. He agreed, but wanted to hold it for a week.
So another week?
I have to make a phone call. Yeah, I'll have it. Yeah.
He extended. Boy, it's grace.
I need another week. I learned from him. See?
They give and take here. Okay.
You get a week.
But I can tell you that whole team is very anxious. So let me keep that. Related to that, I met yesterday with the city battleground, some leadership people there, great team. They have a project that they would like to move forward with on the railroad there. They have a road that crosses there.
Grace Avenue.
Yeah. And they want to be able to have the county's cooperation in order to do what appears to be obvious to make sense out there. So far, they feel like we're not helping them. Can we do what we do? We need to do anything here to authorize that cooperation.
We should get you an update because this is long. This is a back and forth that has happened for a while, and they went to the new guy trying to plead their case, which is good, and that's great that they did that. But there is a lot to it that our county staff has tried to help, but what City of Battleground was asking is for us to basically pay for everything associated with, and they make their reasoning as to why we should have to pay for everything. But there's more to it that maybe we could get them
all right,
to do.
Then Bill, why don't you and I and maybe whatever staff you need get up to speed after this?
And I have a call.
Congratulations, Don.
Hey, thanks for
okay.
Me. I think what you're saying is something different than what I understood that they wanted that we already authorized.
Yeah, because we had authorized like them working together with our row and trying to actually do the crossing in a way that actually like the sharing cost. They came back and said, well, you know, we really appreciate it. We'd really like them to just pay for it all because it's yours anyway. And what we said, well, this is your project and on your road. But, we can get more information.
Well,
now.
Part
there's
of this may be just simply miscommunication or misunderstanding because it sounds like if the holdup had to do with finances, they didn't say anything to me about finances yesterday.
It's because you're the new guy. They were working you, man. Just know that. They were working
the cost,
you.
The money comes in moving the railroad. The railroad has to be moved for what they want to do. And that's the cost, and they didn't want to do any of it.
Right. Okay.
Where we are now, because we don't have a railroad coordinator, and we don't have anybody to talk to them with specifics about the railroad, Macaulay has met with the Temple, who is the leasor, and that's really who the decision has to be first, the person we lease to. And I'm going to call John Williams, the city manager, and tell him to get in touch. That's what the staff wants me to do, is have them get in touch with Temple and have them talk it through first. And so well, maybe they can come to an agreement first. So I have a call into John as of today.
Good. So thank you for that. I'm glad to hear that. So I'll break this down into two different things. One is the cost that needs to be addressed, and that's separate. The other is the cooperation, the agreement, just simply make sure they have the understanding that, yeah, you're for free. It's okay. You will cooperate with you. What's not defined is the cost. And we want to make sure that they don't misunderstand the cost thing as integrated into this. They can do what they want at their cost if they want, right?
No.
That's because it's not their railroad.
It disrupts the railroad.
Yeah.
And okay, that, we'll talk
that's
about
not
this.
A simple
and
decision.
It sounds like it would be really good to have a railroad coordinator to help us with that process.
I'm not familiar with any crossing.
Okay. Well, Grace?
On Grace Avenue, I'm familiar with
the
track paralleling the workshop. They want to know if we have any problem with vacating that.
Right, they're widening the road.
Yeah, and I don't think we do. We talked about that some time ago, a long time ago, maybe a year ago. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have any, the track is such a light rail. it'd be scary, even, and it's all dilapidated, the neat railroad ties. You can stand there and look how crooked it is. We don't use it. And we were talking at vacating that so they could put the road down there. The shack would stay there, but the siding.
The shack burned down.
Right. Yeah. It did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the shack's
but,
yeah.
But we wouldn't remove the shack or the main line there, but only from where the shack was.
The spur.
To the road.
You're talking about the spur. So if we're not using the spur.
I think the city burned down the shack.
fire
we cooperated. Our fire marshal went out there and said, "Hey, no
well, I only want to talk about this to the degree that you feel is appropriate here."
No, we talked about the same thing because I thought you were said crossing.
Well, I think the road has to do with crossing a spur.
Yeah.
And if we're not using the spur, then
we will work on it.
All right. Okay. So yeah, whatever we can do to make sure that we accommodate, and if there's anything that they lack. Maybe we might need a workshop or something to address it. I want to make sure that we're proactive, close the communication gap, and be as to not stand in the way, especially if it was if we're just simply not acting because we're waiting for them, they're waiting for us.
Okay? I agree. You're ahead of you.
Okay. Next thing.
And wait, before you get into the next thing, I'm sorry. Since Francine did here, why don't we roll back to that?
Sorry,
and
sure.
So that
yes.
That way sorry, we don't keep her and Daryl to longer. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
So I requested that Ron Hendrickson be replaced back in his previous position.
What was
and
previous position title?
He was the lead field inspector.
He's in weed management, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was reprimanded in a compromise that we put him on probation, and I thought it was time to reinstate him back into his original position. Bill said we couldn't do that. We didn't have an opening.
Right.
But we were in the middle of transition. And this is a copy I have. And we have 7 or 8 vacant spots that weren't being filled. And some people were being moved around and being transferred. The whole environmental services is being possibly revamped with what the employees come back and share with us, and yet we seem to be getting lost on this individual here, and I can't see no reason why we can't reinstate him.
What's he doing now? I mean, is he on probation? Is he not working, or is he
no,
in a different position?
No, he's a field inspector, I think, and they've put him in the office down here.
So we have a couple of vacancies, 3 vacancies, I guess, that we've been holding on to.
This is the December vacancy list. Yeah.
Right. But we just last week had a conversation with Anita about 3 vacancies that were held off on because of the transition and not wanting to make moves ahead of finding out what the right path is for environmental services. So why would this be different?
It's actually reinstating him where he was. And what they're saying, well, there's no position there now. Well, there's no position there now because we've had no less than what appears to be 7 or 8 changes of positions, renaming of the positions, and even the positions that are up in the air have been renamed. And there's, I can tell from this report and the January report, there's only one lead field inspector.
That's correct.
And we're coming into the season that we start have to address that.
And it's filled.
And in the past, we've had 2 and 3 lead field inspectors,
no.
And we only have one here.
There's only one. There's only been one.
There's only been one lead field inspector.
This is the February. This is the February organizational chart.
This February.
February. Yeah, other than January.
So Daniel Cowley is the lead field inspector, and that's the only lead field right. inspector.
And this is part of the the changes that were made here in that last transparency or transition month.
And I guess I still have the question though, if you would have more than one lead field inspector, that would be an organizational change that seems like we would want to have the full picture of. Environmental services, I mean, we're holding off on positions that environmental services said are mission critical,
because of the reorganization, making sure we're right. And it's, for me at least, it seems like it would be more equitable and more kind of systematic to say, okay, well, if we're holding off on those positions to assess the organizational efficiency, that before we like give somebody an additional title and I assume additional money if they were lead field inspector.
In the same position they have.
Well, but it would be reinstating, so it would be an additional, there'd be two lead field inspectors unless you took the other lead field inspector down. And I don't know, it just seems like if you're going to look at the organizational structure, that you would do it as a whole as opposed to just cherry picking a single spot.
Right now we're kind of helter skelter scattered halfway through a revision and halfway not there, and we're coming into the time of year that they have to go out and do these inspections and notify landowners as to invasive weeds. So I thought the timing was pretty good for that.
I'm curious what the motivation is. Is it to right or wrong, or is it to better equip the department?
I think we've corrected the wrongs, and we're going back, putting him back where he was before. He was reprimanded, and demoted for a period of time, and now that it's time to put him back, we're trying to say, well, we don't have a line item for him, when in fact we're only halfway through. In fact, if you look at one of the charts there, even we have an interim manager, Kevin Tyler, even an interim manager, not in a permanent position. From what we understand here,
let me give a chronology. First of all, he's not on a temporary reassignment. He was reprimanded and demoted. It's a permanent demotion. At the day of the hearing to terminate him, Mr. Mielke told us to stop, and we put him on a year remediation plan, which is only halfway through. So there was no action at all to put him back into his old job. He was about to be terminated when Commissioner Mielke told us to suspend that action and give him a year's worth of whatever to remediate himself from the same charges that were levied against him the first time he was demoted. So that's where we are.
What is scheduled
more
to happen?
To it than that.
No, that's not. There, no there, more to it than that at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, there was.
We can go through the issue.
There was, actually, I thought it should have been during executive session. No. So it started back with the systematic, an individual systematic, planned way of documenting things against individuals. And this appeared to be the third individual from the same department that seemed to be a vendetta type thing, in my opinion. What he was accused of, I think, was doing side work or answering the phone for a side business.
Running his business from the county office.
Accepted phone calls off his personal phone. And so that's what it was. That's one. The other one, with a lady that was having psychiatric problems, distressed at home, instead of taking care of the problem and helping her, we documented it, moved her down here underneath the watchful eye, assigned somebody to look over the shoulder and keep track of what she was doing, did the same thing to this wrong guy. And that was the second and the third incident. And so while we had a disagreement as to the documentation and to the magnitude of the reason that we reprimanded them, we were in disagreement.
Okay. So it sounds like you feel like he wasn't treated fairly, and you're trying to wrong or you're trying to right a wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. What would happen? So there's a year of probation or something. What's scheduled to happen after the year? Anything?
We don't know. It was
I mean, if everything works out so that it's good,
so he just explain that.
Yeah. So in 2011, he was demoted and suspended from the lead position to a field inspector.
So he's still on staff in another role,
right?
In the same department.
In the same department, just not in a lead capacity, which oversees other people's work.
Well, which I thought he was already in a lead in 2012.
So that was in 11. No, then 12 came along, and some of the behaviors resurfaced that he was suspended for before resurfaced, and at that time there were plans or discussions anyway about terminating his employment for continued violations of county equipment and use and time. That didn't happen. Instead, he was put on a, it's called an accountability plan. He said, here's all the things that I will be doing to remedy the situation over the next year. So I think it's just being closely monitored with his manager to make sure that these
and
things.
And what
don't
month are we in?
That happened in December of 12. So we're in this
into the first quarter.
2 months to 3 months mm-hmm. of that plan.
And then at the end of the 12-month, then what would happen?
I think he would just be off that closer scrutiny and would be...
Just continue to stay in the same position.
Yeah, just continue to stay in the same position.
It's the process that really bothered me. It's the way that it was documented. Like I said, I believe we mean mountains are molehills, but he's talking on his phone. To take the person from the field and put down here in the office and then have someone oversee him and keep track of what he's doing. Same thing they did to the lady.
Right.
Same process. You add the additional stress. That lady today, instead of helping her, we fired her after all that time, and she was so emotionally stressed, she's on Social Security today. You know, we're a family here. And we keep talking about team at Christmas. People don't feel good or secure about their jobs, and yet we're going around in this fashion, and cleaning house. And I just disagree with that. I think we're a family here. When we have issues, we fix them.
So as far as the documentation, as far as the documentation side of it, there's a lot more as far as the documentation. And I would kind of look, you know, that this was not done. None of this was done willy-nilly. I mean, right. You know, did what kind of review? And you don't have to get into the documentation itself, but what kind of review was there?
There was an in-depth review the first time.
Was it a single individual? Was it the director of that department that was the only person that actually documented?
HR and the auditor's department.
Reported by employees.
That and reported by employees.
To the director.
So it sounds like the actions and the path and the settlement that Father's finally decided upon has been done, it's being implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a process in if there's still some reservations, Commissioner Mielke feels uncomfortable with this situation, is there a process to kind of go back and revisit that?
Can
you reevaluate it or?
I believe the process was set up to be a 1 year review and tighter reins on the person because of the repeat nature of these occurrences.
Okay.
After that, then those would be lifted and he'd just be on neutral ground at that time, like all other employees.
So in the meantime, there's some.
In the meantime, you have a lead position in this job who applied for it, interviewed, got promoted, and that person's functioning in that role. That's where we said that other vacancy isn't there. But
so after that year, during this year-long
right.
period of time, there's evaluation and there's monitoring going on
right.
to see whether or not the first problems that were identified have been corrected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I would think it would be highly unusual for us commissioners to reach into a department and... Our role as mainly has to do with selecting, participating in the process of department heads and not with your staff.
Along with me, yes. You're absolutely right.
I guess it won't go back that far. We had, in my opinion, we had problems with the department head and the actions of the department head and the method for which he documented things. It wasn't in a fashion of saying, hey, you made a mistake, let's correct it and get on with it. It was, let me document it, and then we're going to bring you in and sit you downstairs here, remove you from the office where you're working, put you down here underneath this group's eye of someone to oversee what you're doing every minute of the day. That is not the way you treat people, and that was part of the problem that we had with the individual that was overseeing it.
I would think that since we have an interim department head now, that we would certainly want to listen to them and consider their views on this at this point. And if there's a new department head that's put in place sometime in the near future, that they would then have the freedom to be able to correct any wrongs or organize the department as best they see fit at that time. So we are coming up. I don't expect that there's going to be that. Usually interim positions don't stay interim forever. That sometime over the next several months, I expect there will be a new department head in there who will then be able to evaluate all of his staff and the organization and the org chart. And at that point, Commissioner, you can share with him any history, whatever, and see if you can win him over.
Or her.
Okay. Thank you. I always want to support my fellow commissioners as best I can. I never want to. It's hard for me to say no, and that includes Steve. What did you ask for anything? What did you ask for that I said no for? Too. So at this point, I would feel like I would be short-circuiting the process and make an exception that would be not recognizing the chain of command that's already in place here. And if we can just be patient until we get the new director in place of in that department, and maybe you can win them over at that point, and then that will sort itself out with the buy-in of that department head.
You're right. There is a chain of command. But when the person in the middle of the link is the problem, and you saw what that was. You were part of the process then too, and then the process that the individual who had the problem did the same thing repeatedly three times. Mm-hmm. Whether you agree or disagree, you know, it set the pattern. It set the pattern of lack of leadership, and so to let the people who became victims, I'm using my term, under that scrutiny of what took place, and to leave them there, it's hard to rectify.
And you're trying to make things right, and you and I have a very different view of the facts associated with this.
We never got a chance to go over it. I tried to present it, and
we got a ton of facts from a lot of people. It wasn't one person
here showing and presenting the fact that some of the facts that were presented at the time were untrue, and that was ignored.
Okay, so. But I mean, I know you're trying to make things
so
right. I get that,
and I think we respect that, because our role is to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly. And that's what you're trying to do. And anytime we make exceptions, the degree of the exception really requires that, and we're talking about a very exceptional move in this part to really bypass two levels of chain command here. Bill Baring sounds like he doesn't feel like this is the right course. The current interim director doesn't feel like it's the right course.
I don't think she has an opinion, Commissioner.
To
be fair to her,
so
she doesn't know anything about it.
Okay. Well, the whoever ends up
was the department manager.
So what I would suggest is that we be patient until we get the new director in there.
Good idea.
And see if you can get persuasion there and a buy-in there to make sure that they have control of their department. That way, we reserve the exceptional situations for grave exceptions. In the meantime, and patience says that
is a virtue.
So we're looking at the same thing under micromanagement. How many levels do we go down?
Well, at this point, the norm is that we participate in the selection of a department head. We don't normally go below that.
Right.
But it goes the same thing in management. We're doing things right now under management of different departments that we're not going through bill on. We're going around and down into the gunnels of our organization here and looking at the operation itself.
Are we?
So maybe we get rid of me then.
No.
Maybe you don't need it. Maybe you don't need a county administrator. The personnel matter is a matter of you've delegated to me with an ordinance, a local law, that says you want me to direct the operations, the day-to-day operations of the county. Mm-hmm. That includes the personnel matters. Mm-hmm. This is highly unusual to be at this level.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay. So okay. I think we have direction for now. We have direction for now. We may not have unanimity, but we have direction for now. So, and I think that we have that. So thank you very much to both of you for providing that.
And Bill, we need you here. We appreciate you here. You're doing a great job. So, don't...
Second. All right. Back to you, Commissioner.
Okay. A new item that we ought to at least listen to and consider would be the event center, the fairgrounds property. When I met our staff out there and... Okay, go ahead. We've got some acreage we could buy out there, and that takes money. And the opportunity is, if that acreage gets sold to other parties, it could be a lost opportunity. Anyway, I'll wait till Commissioner Stewart gets back on that one, because it's... I don't want to miss anything.
We're going to stop vacancy again.
Sorry.
We're going to stop vacancy review again to get some money for the Vitus line.
Well, that's why I...
I'm just kidding. By the way, for your information, yes, the RTC will be live.
Oh, wonderful.
But why did you stay in the training room? That was a question.
That was what both Tom and I preferred. I think we all preferred just to bring it over here. There was only one reason why they thought it would be. They're kind of yielding to for the convenience of the county, because our Tuesday evening is the same Tuesday evening as their Tuesday.
We went
within 7 minutes of our board time, of our hearing time.
That's what it was, okay.
Yeah. So if we were to somehow... They figured we have to reconfigure the room.
Right.
I understand. I think they would be willing to just...
That's right. We had a sidebar conversation, Dean and I, about that. And
it would actually be preferable in this big room if we could somehow reconfigure the room or live with the room the way it is. Maybe the Tuesday evenings are more like a round table for our county commissioners.
No, that would be a regular meeting.
We make ours at 6:30.
Yeah.
That was the other thing that they said.
Give
us a half hour. But you'd have to end that meeting, and we'd just keep a facilities guy there to reconfigure the meeting.
We would have to do. I mean, we were doing that last night.
So what you're weighing is, you're weighing the reconfiguration of the room versus CVTV having to log all that stuff.
And $130.
Actually,
$130.
I'm not paying $130. I'm trying to get them to pay for it. I already got to pay for my own coffee here, so
they got to bring all portable TV.
Right. Oh yeah, yeah.
What are you trying to get?
Let's talk about mug. We're talking about CVTV coverage of the RTC meeting.
Right. Yeah.
And you just brought up a point that I hadn't thought about, which is a inconvenience for the CVTV staff.
They just have to bring in all that equipment and put the thing across the road.
Well, it's really two things. One is that, yes, the first part is they would have to set up all the equipment ahead of time. And the other is we walk right over and we start our meeting right away, and there's leaving all that equipment there, open, exposed to the public.
Their guys are right there. Their guys, because their guys are going to be filming the board meeting in the next minute.
Well, but they're going to be in the little control room. They're going to be in the control room.
They'll go back
in
the control room.
What their equipment is going to be sitting there open, and they could be walk away.
We can lock the door.
So what's the request? What are you hoping for?
Well, we would have it in the hearing room.
Voted wrong.
I got you. Well, we'll have one meeting because we already approved it, right? So, I mean, as a board, RTC board already approved it.
Yep.
You're not going to be able to change it for the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
However, my suggestion would be let's see how it looks when they do it. And if it looks like it's a pain, then we can just suggest. I mean, I'm with you. Yeah. If it's a pain, then we should suggest, hey, we can be a little flexible, whether it's time, like you had said, us going a little later for them to...
What's that?
What?
$130
more. Oh, that it costs more. Right. To RTC,
To be in the little room.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're all on the same page, aren't we? Yeah. That would be better if it was in the hearing room.
My only issue with it is, seriously though, having sat up at the dais with a lot of people at the dais, is it's an awkward, crammed in, it's not very conducive to actually the kinds of work that we do. So sitting up at the dais is awkward, but then the question is, if you set it up like RTC usually sets it up, then you lose the value of having the hearing room and having it be bigger, because you'd take up a bunch of space, so you'd end up with a space that was same number of seats available. If you set it up not at the dais, if you set us up in a big square. Well, so that's my only question, is like, how would you do it?
Well,
that's the only question. And then how do we reset it?
Actually, you know how we've had a couple of meetings like this in the past, like for instance the workshop of the wineries, where we actually set up the square tables and we engaged more with almost a round table kind of experience. And maybe we take this opportunity to make those Tuesday night commission public meetings in a more informal format, and we just use that same format as we did with the RTC. So that we sit down with the people and we welcome them to the table, and we can still have enough room for the chairs there if you want. No?
Our hearing is not meant to have dialogue.
Well,
he said it.
We have control over that. Why don't we make that so it does?
I try to have control, but you keep you keep pushing it.
All right. I think it would be helpful for us to have dialogue at least once a month like that.
Anytime you want.
Well,
but not during the hearing.
All right.
Right. If it's a public hearing, then we have to go up.
Let's think about it. Let's think about it. It's a good suggestion, and let's think about that. We don't have to decide it today, but just to be.
Okay. The RTC is live. That's the point.
That one's good to go. At least for this next meeting.
So we'll test drive it, see how it works. And
that sounds great.
We'll leave the between now and then. Let's say that the next RTC meeting, we do it that way. When that meeting comes, we already ought to have considered between then and now. Whether or not we want to propose a change into the hearing room, right. Then, so we can't just experience it and see how we like it.
Agreed.
We would talk with.
Not bring it up there.
Yeah.
With CBTV, and we would consider how would we do that. Would
exactly.
We change our meeting time to 6:30, or would we make it more of a round table or something?
Totally agree.
Okay, great. All right, I'll move on back to where I started here on the fairground property.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had a map of the fairgrounds. I don't. Basically, there are two very large parcels of land. One's very large, the other one's small. We have already the inability for us to be able to use the amphitheater and the
event center.
Expo center, right, at the same time, for lack of parking. There is a huge area of land that's owned by like four or five owners.
Mm-hmm.
That's right there in the perfect spot.
It's a great parcel.
I think there's two owners.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like four or five parcels, maybe owned by two owners.
Great parcels, though.
And that's for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. if we think in the long run, what would be the formula for success that would maximize our multi-million dollar investment? Actually, somebody else's multi-million-dollar investment in the amphitheater there. Not only would that provide for parking, it would also provide for some other facilities for the long-term future for that. And there's also another parcel on the north side, a much smaller parcel, that we lease right now on a periodic basis. If that sells to somebody and they develop it, it would no longer be available. So the opportunity is there for us to be able to consider. Do we want to think about that as an amenity that we want to include to better equip that facility? It would be perfect for it. The only reason we wouldn't do it, I expect, is because we can't afford it. Right?
Money. We have, and I have been working with the north piece of property
mm-hmm.
to swap it out for one of our excess properties. But we don't have those yet.
And then as far as the other parcels...
we don't have any money for it.
Well, let's take that into two pieces.
So as far as the no money, just to kind of add to
the flavor of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. That they had historically, they have asked for an exorbitant amount of money for the good parcels,
which is not even an option because we have to pay whatever it's assessed
for. Exactly. And the second piece of it is it's not just parking that's the issue, right, as to why the conflict. It's actually ingress egress. It's the right people coming in and out.
And this is perfect for the ingress egress one of 10th Avenue because that's where the road goes.
Okay. Hold on. The 10th ends, right? I mean, we don't have the bridge yet. So the only ingress egress is at 179th. So it's not necessarily the frontage right there. It's actually the 179th interchange and all of the people coming in and out of that. That was the major piece of it as far as a traffic snarl, that they were saying we can't have a big event at the event center and the amphitheater at the same time. There's actually lots of parking. More parking would be great, and actually those parcels, I totally agree, I would love to get those for the purposes of the master plan, parking, awesome. But just know that in and of itself won't solve our problems to be able to have both of those be able to function. We've got to get 10th done. We got to get that bridge built. Once we get that, then absolutely. Then we'll have the traffic piece solved, we'll have parking solved, we're good to go. So I'm not trying to throw cold water on it. It would be great to get those parcels. It's just until we get 10th built out or until we do an underpass on 179, it still won't solve the issue for us to be able to use both at the same time.
All your points are valid there. So I'm not bringing this as to necessarily say, let's do this. I'm bringing this up to say, we ought to really consider this.
I'm with
and
you.
And have a dialogue on this and do some homework. So I'll break this down into two parts. One, the northern piece of property, if there is a interest on in that landowner to swap with another piece of property somewhere else, then we ought to make it a high priority, well, at least bring it up on that priority list, to be able to identify what other parcels are available. In other words, that's not going to happen unless we make it add it to the action item list and scout and see what is available. So, Bill, can we make that a project for us to be able to locate another piece of
It's actually already excess? Something Tom's working on, so let's just add it to the list, and Tom's run lead on it, so let's add it to the list.
Let's make it a action item that is on the list, and we'll act on it as best we can. Okay, that's the first part.
I think what the individual is interested in is does commercial property. We have some commercial property over there on 15th, just south of, or west of Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing anything with it. Never been put on a list to be presented to us.
So are you cool with taking the lead from the board and putting this on the list of like things we're prioritizing as...
We need more than just that one. I don't know if they would accept that one. I'm just
Understood.
Saying we have so much property out there that we're not getting it.
Okay, well... I'll
so
be happy
work
to
can
sign
be done
up.
Then to figure that out, but I'm with you. Let's make it an action item on our list.
I'll be happy to sign up to help facilitate that with staff. And
Commissioner Wilkie's already run a lead. I don't want to step on that. He's already been.
Well, I just want to be ensured that if that's a really good idea, and that would be a no cost way for us to be able to fix that. And so I'm just
the only thing we have to do. We have to get from our staff, Bill, a list of excess property.
Right. And it's available for us online. So.
That includes leased property.
We bet.
We should be more specific. Anything we have that might be in a commercial area that we might be able to use to trade for the north part.
Right.
That would solve the north part.
So the first action item on that is let's move it to the priority list, work with staff, and see if we can get it into that get it done category.
We got it.
Okay.
What's the next one?
Next part is the examining the possibility of us buying maybe a part or at least some of those lots, one lot at a time. And really what that requires is us working with our finance department, our budget office, to be able to identify the feasibility of this. Because if we were to buy it, I do not want to acquire debt to do it. And that would mean you're gonna pull some cash from some place, and we can't pull it from some place unless we identify it first. We can't identify it unless we actually stop doing something that we're not required to do now. So we're trading one priority for the other. So the question is, what can we do to underspend our current budget so that we can free up that cash so that we can at least incrementally consider buying one or two or three or four of these parcels.
we underspend the budget annually, and we've already, whatever we plan to underspend, we've already put in the budget to balance the budget for the next 2 years. So it will have to be more than what we've already planned for in the budget, which is about 4%.
And that was through the reconfiguration process that's listed in here. We've been working on reconfiguration to just meet our budget.
You've been reading your stuff.
Sorry.
So we have a budget, kind of a evaluation of where we're at coming up here.
When the commissioners have something that they want to buy that's not in the budget, we go put it in the project mode, and we will work with Commissioner Milkey about his about the swap. We will look for what the cost is. I'll have Macaulay do a plan and how he would plan to do this, and we would look for how it would be funded and give you options to do that.
Okay.
Perfect. Okay.
All right. Next thing, the impact fees. It's good that we did the little Band-Aid, was it a meeting or two ago?
We do. We got a work session scheduled for impact fees.
Yeah, we do.
We do? When?
Yes.
Good.
Soon. I talked to Steve Schulte about it yesterday, so I know it's happening.
So let's get the date and for Commissioner Medore and get the...
And we're going to meet with
sure
you before
that.
That was what we talked about, is meeting with you before that so that we can talk to you about how all that stuff fits together, level of service, concurrency, and TIF, so that we go into that meeting all on the same page for how to maybe talk about policy changes.
But that's just TIFs.
Well, let's start.
You
talk
to me about something different.
Help me.
We have on the project list, the priority project list, the elimination of fees. I sat down with you on Monday, and I wanted to narrow that down because I'm assigning the projects now that you've told us you want to do for the next year.
Yes.
One of those projects, elimination of all fees, and you narrowed that down for me. Let me narrow that down for me. You want to eliminate those fees that can hinder job creation.
Yes.
That's what you said to me.
Yes, that's right.
That includes all development fees, all building fees, TIFs, PIFs, and SIFs, as far as I'm concerned. I'm assembling a project team to write up a project proposal of what's going to happen. So this would be one offshoot of that, would be the traffic impact fees to explain how that's going to happen. But I'm writing up the bigger project.
And in retreat, I begged to separate TIFs and concurrency and level
and
service.
And I disagreed with you and overruled you.
Okay.
And you always win.
But actually, no. The population, the TIFs are going to be the most complex to deal with. So.
Understood. So when we have a work session on that, go ahead.
Yeah, and thank you for accommodating that. What I want to make sure I don't communicate is anytime we use the word 100% or all or perfect, we're usually on dangerous ground. You just said all fees.
You were describing.
Okay, I'm going to fine-tune that.
My job.
Okay.
All right. So you'll work on fine-tuning that and come back to us.
Wait. Let me finish. What I want to be able to do is ensure that we remove the pain from job creation. And I'm willing to move in steps that are reasonable and efficient and effective, that are doable without going to extreme. So in this process of searching for how can we remove the pain so that we can get the most bang for the buck, I don't want to say it has to be all 100%. What I am saying is let's find the most practical way to do that, sensible way to do that.
Most attainable.
Attainable. Ooh, I like that word.
That's a quote.
So let me get this straight. I think what you probably have to do is go back and look at each department's budget and their budgets and their operation of every department is based on their income, what they bring to the table. For example, in the permitting office, we charge for what we do, the time it takes for the employee to do the permit. So that's part of their budget, along with their rent, their lights. That's what, for example, Marty Snell's office cost. So you have to take a look at that and see what that cost is and say, where am I going to get the money to replace all the things that's been held up by the money we received from the permitting process. So if we look at a million dollars, for example, And I think I might be conservative there.
Hold on one sec. Sorry, the Mary said there's an emergency.
Yeah, we have kind of an emergency. The information technology people are trying to fix a virus that involves our website and could corrupt computers of web users, and they would like to take the site down to fix it and have us put out an announcement about it and have a temporary place where people could find out that we're temporarily down.
Can you give them a ETA or kind of a understanding
well,
of how long it might
it's,
be?
It's our IT people. Our IT people think it's at least 48 hours.
Well, if it's going to end up corrupting, you know,
we don't
computers
want
throughout the system, we don't want that, obviously.
We don't
so
want to hurt people
we good?
On the outside.
We good? Go ahead to put out the announcement and take it down?
I already have it on my computer.
What? The virus?
You probably brought it in.
The notice of the virus.
Oh, sure. All right. Now you see. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
So it would be a cooperation between IT and PIO.
Understood.
Okay.
Commissioner, did you have something? Sorry.
Yeah. When IT says we have a virus and we need to take action right now, we need to give them the freedom to do whatever they need to do to protect the system.
Agreed.
Do it.
Okay.
Totally agree.
All right.
Cool.
I'll be right back.
Thank you. All right. Sorry. You were saying.
You need to take a look at that cost. I'm not sure. You know, off the top of your head, round numbers, what Marty's office?
$5 million.
$5 million for the operation of that department. So if you do away with the fees, or even half of the fees, you have to have a source to pay the employees.
Here's what I'm thinking. We have staff that's down there now. And whether or not anybody walks through the door and causes them to do any work, that staff is the meter's running for a certain dollar per hour. And whether or not they're just twiddling their thumbs, that dollar per hour is the same as if they're doing useful work. So the before and the after of our change doesn't have to do with changing staff or increasing staff. It has to do with whether or not we are utilizing the staff. And so what it really comes down to is a difference between the staff. We're now talking about, in other words, we're not talking about a difference in cost. The cost is the same whether or not the staff does anything useful.
Okay.
What we're talking about is how much gain would we, revenue would we get from fees coming in through the door. Right? So before we take any action, we need to be able to have a clear identification, a very good understanding as to what that revenue is and what's the source of it. In other words, really understand that. That way we can tackle, we understand what's going to be practical there. Right now, a single number, $5 million, means nothing to me, but because it doesn't give us enough direction, it doesn't help us to focus on anything.
Right.
So we need information that would help us to identify if we got zero permits coming in, we got zero revenue, versus if we got, pick a number, a useful number of a target, what we would hope would be job creating permits, what would be the cost to process what would be the extra revenue that those would bring in for fees? Because the cost is the same.
Well, just to be clear as far as the cost goes, and we'll get all of this information, but we had this entire conversation when we came off the housing boom. And we had lots of really tough conversations about how to deal with the fact that the costs were going to be the same regardless of that the permits were being lowered. And the answer was the cost will not be the same, and we cut them by half. So they actually cut to the bone of the kind of the minimum number of staff so that there weren't people twiddling their thumbs with it. What we also said at the time was we had been subsidizing with the general fund to a great extent during these good times because we had the money to do it. When we didn't have the money to do it, we said, look, there are going to be fewer of you, and you got to pay your own bills much more than you have in the past. And that meant them being more of a fee-based system, that they were actually bringing in revenues, and that's how they paid their bills. For that. So there's lots of information to get. There definitely are things that we inevitably can do
to be better. I don't doubt that a bit. But there is a lot that has already gone on to cut to be able to actually cut the general fund contribution to that. So as far as if you take the fees down, the question is exactly what Commissioner Mielke said, is it's not as much, well, what can you get rid of doing, because we've cut a lot of that already. There may be some margin that we can work with, and within that, the question is, where's the general fund revenue going to be to replace that? And that's so, but you got to get, we got to get all the numbers to make that.
We need all the numbers.
We cut our employees back because the workload went back.
Yeah.
So we have just enough employees working all the time to have that income coming in.
Right.
Now, if we cut that off and increase their workload, we're going to have employees again.
And that means even more general fund if we don't have.
Let me give two analogies.
Yeah.
One analogy is we have C-Tran buses. We used to have 20, just this is a fictitional, unrelated, but just an analogy. We used to have 20 C-Tran buses, and we cut the C-Tran buses down to now we have 10 C-Tran buses. The cost to operate 10, yes?
No, I'm just waiting because I'm getting somebody
okay.
on the phone.
All right. If ever you need to interrupt, it's perfectly okay.
No,
just,
no,
okay.
I'm getting somebody on the phone.
All right. Whether or not those buses run full or whether those buses have zero passengers, it's still going to be the same cost.
They're running full right now.
Okay. Let me finish my analogy here.
Well, I'm working with your analogy. Okay.
We want passengers on the C-Tran bus, on the buses, because those passengers, every one of them, are job creators. That's what we're after. Okay. If we become so successful that we're processing so many brand new job creator fees, that's the kind of problem we want to have.
More people have to have more buses.
At some point, we'll be so successful we may say, you know what, we don't just need 10 buses, we need one more, and we ramp up in order to accommodate these brand new job creators activity that's going on here, which is a success. That's good. There's another analogy is the old pump. Okay, my grandfather's farm, we had a pump. That pump would not pump any water until you first dumped water into it. You had to prime the pump.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got lots of water coming out of it as long as you kept pumping. And that is where we're at now. We're not priming the pump. And we hardly have anything coming out. Job creators are not happening here. If we can somehow identify the source, we can take this water, which is really to compensate for the fees that we would get, and prime the pump with that, now we're going to get job creation happening. That job creation is going to bring two sources of revenue to the county. One short term that's going to, or one immediately starts, and that is the sales tax. The other one is delayed by a year or two or more, a new valuation of developed properties. That first one of sales tax is a sizable potential income for us. That's the water coming out. So if we're going to be successful, somehow we need to be able to get, we need to find the revenues in by stop doing something that's a lower priority in order to take that saved water and pump that into in place of the revenue that's not coming in already, so we can get more revenue coming in. The whole county multiplies with new jobs. The engine starts firing up. And I hope we get to the point where we have so many permits flooding in here, we have a problem on our hands, we have to hire staff.
Okay, so first of all, there was a lot there, and we got to get out of here. So we can't be, we got to stop the proselytizing a little bit, because you're preaching to the choir a little bit, because we agree with you. We agree with you.
I got some more.
That's fine. We agree with you in priming the pump. The whole idea of the fee holiday for job creators
for
was exactly
more,
was
we
priming
need to bring
the pump.
That down to like two.
Okay, so that's a change to the fee holiday. That's not as broad as what we're talking. I mean, that's a good targeted strategy for how we might do these things. So those are that's a good direction. We can definitely look at how do we adjust that to actually get to what you're after. So take a look at the fee holiday. If it's just bring it from 10 to 2, then that's something we can bring forward.
Yeah,
that's a simple change. That's what I'm trying to keep it to, is like there are simple things that we can do, and then there's big, huge, broad things that potentially have huge general fund concerns.
A good example, Marty is keeping us informed as to how much every month we're subsidizing the permitting office right now from the fee holidays. I think we're somewhere around $500,000, $400,000 that we our stimulus package is still feeding.
And we did ask, and we'll get, and Marty did the numbers for us, and we've asked, and I haven't gotten it for a while, we did ask, what's the return on the investment? You know, can we start seeing what's the sales tax on construction? What's the increase, because we get a boost for that first property tax because it's over and above the 1% cap. So what's the revenue return on that? So we'll get that too. Because we agree with you. I mean, showing a return on investment, making investment to prime the pump, we're with you.
And there's a little tiny bit of increase into the general fund that we're trying to take credit for from the sales tax of the new construction. We can't identify it or separate it out, but there's a little bit of an increase, and we're just jumping up saying, we'll take credit for that from the stimulus package. But we're actually subsidizing Marty's department with that little tiny fee holiday that we have.
So, but we'll get some more information on that. We'll also look at what other kind of targeted strategies are you thinking of for that. So we'll get there as far as that. We look forward to, you know, more on that. Did you have anything else, Commissioner?
The direction, I just want to make sure, be careful with the word all. We want to be able to move in the direction where we get priming in the pump going, and I'll start with whatever we can afford.
Okay.
Well said. We can do that.
What else you got, Commissioner? All right, that's it. What else
do you want to hear more about the RSN?
Okay.
You said some stuff.
Okay.
In the passing.
Yes.
That we could possibly have a lawsuit.
Yes, we've already been informed that there's a lawsuit. Here's what I've been informed about. A female Latino applied woman. Females are women.
Hold on. Okay. Potential litigation. That's executive session.
Oh.
So he got excited for a second down there. So for the potential litigation, let's schedule an executive session for next week. Is that okay? Right?
So I'm under the impression that we are under reorganization.
No.
We have a different leader.
No.
What?
No. 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 Here's the situation. The most obvious mandate from the state that says this is the highest priority, one of the highest priorities you do is to increase your penetration. The penetration is flat. It's been flat from the beginning. There's one exception for a little bit in one county. We're not succeeding in fulfilling that mandate. There are two areas where problems that need to be resolved. One is that the board has no legal counsel. The legal counsel that's there reports only to the CEO, and that legal counsel specializes in Medicare and Medicaid, which is one of the highest fees rates you can get. Most of the legal work that needs to be done by the RSN does not require Medicare or Medicaid super high rates. And so the decision that the board made on Friday was to start the process to identify a legal an attorney that would do two things. One, they would report to the board, and two, they would be a lower cost because they're not this high priced specialty available resource to the staff, and the staff would use them for everything except for the those areas of Medicare or Medicaid. In other words, it's a lower rate, they use more often. And so that is something that what we decided to do, that as long as we have the condition that all three prosecuting attorneys from the three counties approve of that process, then we can go forward with at least identifying and getting a potential candidate and then make the decision hopefully at the next meeting. Okay, that's the first action. Any questions on that one?
You're talking about the leadership position.
I'm talking about legal counsel, just an attorney for the organization.
Okay.
I asked the attorney
that is already working with the organization. I mean, he's got a lot of experience, decades of experience. Have you ever seen any government agency where the legal counsel reported to the top employee instead of the board? And he said, no, I've never been aware of that situation in my life. This is a highly unusual, exceptional situation, and it's problematic.
Okay. So you're dealing with that piece of it.
What was, let me ask that question another way. It resembles what I see very close to Lifeline. Lifeline is passed through money from us, and then they have its own organization. And that seems to be what this new healthcare provision is turning to regional services, whether it be in healthcare. In fact, we're actually lagging right now with a whole healthcare program called regionalization. The RSN that we have is just the first part. And then we have Lifeline, which is very similar in structure. It has, over here, it has some identified pass-through money, and that's the same as the RSN. And so I'm not comfortable with Lifeline had trouble because they were trying to take care of more people with the tax money they had. And in order to do that, it wasn't enough money to take care of the people, so they had to have more private people. And people come in with their own insurance, for example, and the insurance companies paid more than what the pass-through money for that was. So is that what's going on with the RSN?
Not that I'm aware of. Nobody said anything about that.
So the RSN is for mental health, and the Lifeline is for mental health.
Drug and alcohol.
Drug and alcohol.
Yeah. Addictions.
And then they both have a funding source.
Multiple funding sources. I mean,
the difference is Lifeline is a provider.
Yeah.
RSN is an overall government agency.
Working with providers.
Working with providers.
Yeah. So his
is a corporate problem.
The RSN contracts with places like Lifeline for service, but for mental health, not chemical.
Does the RSN rely on private insurance companies?
No. Medicaid, almost entirely Medicaid. Right.
Only Medicare and Medicaid.
And the only difference to that is that we have the guarantor.
That's correct.
Okay. I'm concerned that we're not moving faster, because we have been in existence for how long? A year?
October 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'm hearing what we have to do to get the ball rolling.
Right. We already have this. This is something I've inherited. This is already, the CEO has been picked. The staff has already been picked. This RSN, there are 11 RSNs in the state, and exclude King County because they're their own beast. So we compare ourselves to the other 9 RSNs. What I understand is that this RSN has twice the staff of any other RSN, and yet we're not achieving the goal. That's the status that is a problem to correct. So the second item is intended to bring to help us identify what's wrong, how do we fix it. Dale Jarvis is the other decision that we made as a board was to contract with Dale Jarvis. He provided a $5,200 contract to look at everything in the organization, look at the org chart, interview with all the staff, and come back with recommendations. In other words, help us to know how do we fix this and how do we get it going in the right direction. That decision is also pending approval by the three district, the three county prosecuting attorneys. That's in place. I talked with Chris Horn about both of these things, so he's already on it to enable these two resources really to help us understand how do we fix this and how do we get on the right path. And his fee is tiny compared to the consultant. That
how long is it going to take to get up and running? It seems like we've been at this before.
Well, they're up and running, right? I mean, there's contracted providers getting paid every day. It was a fairly seamless transition in my experience in terms of the service provided, which is critical. Every day, thousands of people with mental health issues and problems are getting contracted services in our three counties.
Right.
So the service is being provided by the contractors, but the rest of it is what's
Of money, and it keeps increasing. Last time we looked, it was $17 million in sitting in reserves, and it keeps increasing by millions of dollars each month, it appears. So it's not for lack of resources. It's not for lack of staff. We have to... that's where we take... Dale Jarvis is very experienced with RSNs in both... with the mental health services and with RSNs, and in a great position to advise us so that we can get this, identify what's wrong, get us on the right path. Hopefully, the three prosecuting attorneys, one in each county, will facilitate that so that we can turn on the lights and get it going in the right direction. And now, I don't want to overstate, we are not failing. People are getting served, and I believe that we have good staff in there, but we are not increasing our penetration, which is the primary mandate and the reason that they went. No, one of the reasons we went to an RSN in the first place. We're not serving any more people than when it was first formed.
Where do we balance our involvement and keep separate from the micromanagement of the organization?
Well, that's where the Dale Jarvis will go in, identify what the scoop is, and bring that information to us.
Okay. 30 days.
I think it was. Yeah. As soon as we can get that green light.
I didn't see the proposal, Commissioner. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll make sure you get a copy of it.
Okay. Yeah, I guess he's got to go in there and look at each person's function in the organization. And you made the comment that we have twice as many people in our organization than the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So. I would certainly second that there are efficiencies that can be found within the organization that Dale should be able to help with. I also think that there are at least a couple of positions that everybody who knows this organization and knows the organizational intent remain unfilled, that need to be filled, that that are just hanging out there. And so my concern would be stalling out on any progress to get to reach the goal, the increased penetration, which means making sure that you have the funding as well as the organization to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There are significant issues popping right now at the state and federal level that we're missing, and so I'm concerned that we're stalled out on everything waiting for this report. Totally agree, and everyone who I've talked with about it has agreed that taking a look at the internal structure and figuring out where we might be able to find efficiencies to actually not add another dozen staff members within the organization, that makes good sense, and to make sure they're being maximally efficient. But there are a couple of positions, and the government liaison, government relations position is the key one that I've looked at, that every one of the staff, every one of the people who we've talked with has said this is a position that is necessary to fulfill the mission of the organization, and that's gotten stalled up and gotten caught up into the rest of this mess. That, I think, is unfortunate. I'd love to see that move forward in partnership with actually looking at the organizational structure.
I'm hearing we don't have a CEO or a manager.
No, there's been no changes. We have said yes and given the staff and the consultants have advised the path ahead. This is the same direction as the previous board has said. We haven't changed that at all. We said yes to every single request that they've had in order to enable them, and there is plenty of money to be able to fund this organization. They've got excess of money to be able to accomplish what their goals. So the only exception is this government liaison, which is basically a lobbyist.
It's not just a lobbyist.
Well, that's what they call it. That has nothing to do with their day-to-day operations and accomplishing their mandate from the state to increase their penetration. So we have certainly the governing board. In fact, in this last meeting, it's been very labor-intensive for the governing board for us to be able to help them to facilitate them. This last meeting was scheduled to be a two-hour meeting. It ended up being 5 1/4 hours. They were presenting a report from the CEO that was just going on and on and on. And I finally said, I see that we're going really long. Where is this leading, and how can we help you? And they finally skipped to the end and said, basically, we want to increase our penetration. I said, well, yeah, they're already sold on that. What else do you need? And they also brought to us when they have a contractor. One of the way to increase your penetration is to increase your number of contractors. So they had Lutheran Services apply. And yet they waited all this time, and they came to the board, and they are asking for our permission to start the process. And I asked them, why would we ever say no? How many contractors do we already have? And they said, well, 11. Are any of them exclusive? No. Then why would we ever say no? Are you negotiating prices? No, they're already set. Then, okay, we say, we just want to make sure that you have the understanding that not only do you have the green light, but you really have the welcome, encouragement. Please act with all speed to accommodate everything you can and bring to the point that up to the point of just short of signing the contract, and bring that to the board so that we can understand at that point you've done all the homework, you're ready for it, and we can consider that at that.
So, okay.
And we passed that, of course.
All right. So, and I heard a little different take on why the meeting took 5 1/4 hours, agenda items being brought up without being notified ahead of time, an hour-long executive session that was not, that was not something that they had anticipated. Given our experience and how long we're going here, and that certainly my... I haven't watched the meeting, so I wouldn't care to hazard a guess, but based on our experience, my caution would be that putting it on staff, that's why the meeting took a longer time than it was supposed to. We also have to look at our own involvement in it and say, all right, now, maybe did I have a role to play in that?
The two items you're talking about were the jail, Dale Jarvis, and was the attorney. Both of those, it took us... there are things, the conversations that we had to have in place with the existing consultant and also Dale Jarvis, and we're able to get that with very short notice. So I didn't have any chance to add that to the agenda except for to communicate the night before that we'll be able to add that an executive session. And, well, actually, I brought those two items to add to that agenda. So what I'm not looking for blame. I'm looking for moving us forward in a way that is identifying solutions.
So are we. Moving forward. Okay. That's what we'd definitely like to do as opposed to spinning wheels. Right. So did that answer your question?
I just encourage us to move ahead.
Yes.
If the contract has got to be easy, if it's the fixed rate, you just sign up each provider at that rate for the services and people that they take on.
Nah, it's more about the administrative oversight associated with that. That's where the staffing concerns that they're going to look at, which is, again, a valuable, the rates for the providers themselves are, you're right, those are set, and there's a variety of different ones. But we'll, so we're looking for movement forward, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And okay. So did that
answer? I just want to encourage you to move forward. I'm under the impression that our CEO wasn't there.
She was sick. Yeah. She called in. She was on the phone.
But and the and that she is not going to be used. That there's a man that was hired.
What?
In her place?
No, Connie was not. There was a request, but they didn't go through.
So we got somebody else.
No. Here's the scoop. The there was a staff position that was filled within the organization a while ago. A woman, Latino woman, who was very well qualified.
No, that was the lawsuit position.
Oh, okay.
He's talking about something
when
different.
I heard that.
He's talking about
no,
that Connie,
the
there was a request made to actually get rid of Connie.
The executive session had to do with the CEO.
Right.
And
didn't pass.
Right. Okay. And really, we've been calling her CEO. This consultant's been defining her as a CEO. The bylaws say she's an administrator.
She's going to be on the website.
Okay. So let's not go further into anything that may have actually happened within executive session in another organization. Thank you very much, Bill.
I'm sorry.
All right. Anything further on that?
No.
Okay. Did you have anything else, Commissioner?
No.
Bill.
Quickly.
And quickly, please.
Judge Gonzalez and Judge Stanky are starting up. Sorry.
It's a sticky, isn't it?
The Courthouse Security Committee. It's a committee of all of us around to talk about the security of the courthouse. It's been inactive. I'd like to put McCauley on it to represent us.
As our facilities director.
Yeah, he's the facilities director.
Good to go.
You might remember when we did uncollectibles at the beginning of the year. We had 183, 117 were fire marshal inspections, people that haven't paid their bills.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's because we had the big high amount. Since May of 2010, we've had the hourly rate. They want to know if they can start resume collection of unpaid collections since now they're the lower rate. And that's a request of the auditor's office. And we should be doing that if we can.
I'm good.
I think we have to.
Yeah. Okay. Unpaid bill. Pay bill.
Ron Onslow, the mayor of Bridgefield.
Who?
Ron Onslow.
Joking. Keep going.
Onslow.
Sorry.
June 1st is the second annual Big Paddle, which is you paddle a canoe down the river trail. And they want to know at noon, and they want to know if any of y'all want to come.
Can you get it to Linnea and then have us look at our calendars, please?
I will.
Thank you.
Commissioner Adore came aboard with significant concerns about staff allocation of resources for advisory committees. I did a study of all of them. Here's the results of my study. If you take it and digest it for a week.
We will study.
Well, this way you've been wearing your spare time.
No, exactly.
It's really quite well done, actually.
If you don't say so yourself. All right, keep moving.
Summary's on the front. They asked five questions. There are the answers.
We will read it. Thank you. We'll do our homework.
Great. Thank you.
Good work.
SEPA thresholds. You know the SEPA thresholds have changed. Marty wants to know if he can come brief the board time next week.
Yes, please.
Oh, I'm looking forward in that SEPA thing that's changed. Is he going to share with us what he learned from
Spokane?
More exemption.
That's coming from
that'll be
part of
the
Are you talking about Spokane? How they use the TIF?
That's the TIF work session.
Yeah, that's part of the TIF.
He's going to talk about what things are exempt.
Yes, that's different. This is a different thing as far as the SEPA.
Can I pay the Waco bill?
What's that?
I'm holding one of your bills.
Washington Association of County Officials.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mean to hold that. Waco is good.
You got to tell me that.
All right, good to go.
Finally, request for work sessions. Waringa wants to come and brief you on the 2013-14 NPDES permit process, and we have to update our permit.
Okay.
Doug Smith Lee, Vancouver's going a different way on the EMS-2. You have a 2-year reorientation of the EMS-2, the Emergency Medical Services District 2. They just want to come and do the redesign update and tell you where we are. They're about done with it. And what's going to happen with our relationship with the city of Vancouver.
So you said the city's going to do something else.
We think so. They have done nothing official yet, but their work session on Monday seemed to give us that impression.
Okay. Help me to get up to speed.
I will.
Being the new guy in the block.
Well, this is going to get everybody up to speed.
Yeah.
It's going to tell you all of their work.
I need a little extra help.
AMR contracts with us, so they come back and ask for more money. We beat them up, and our staff went back and made some compromises.
Got a whole checklist of changes.
We got that list not too long ago. Yeah. And it used to be that Vancouver was part of
they still are.
That service area, So I'm not sure if they're
still are.
I don't know if they're
talking about doing it themselves. Yeah.
So they're talking about going back out and doing it with the fire ones, I bet you.
Bronson Potter, I think we ought to have a Commissioner Mundor has asked for an a briefing on the fiber optic issue that's going around, the government fiber optic issue. Instead of that giving you a specific issue, you want to update the board where Comcast cable franchise negotiations are because it focuses on that.
Sure.
And then a long-term pending work session, and I believe Commissioner Stewart met with Oliver Rojaco in terms of the comp plan update process. We're going to schedule a long-term in July to begin to talk to you about the comp plan update.
Okay. But, and anything that is going to involve zoning, land use, anything that's going to be
fees.
Please, as much lead time as you can give me, let me know early so I can get studied, I can learn, do my homework. What I don't want to happen is to say, here it is, it's going to be for this next meeting, and go ahead and make big decisions based on lack of information. Please give me lots of lead time,
yes,
weeks of lead time,
all right,
to get ahead of it.
Got till July for that work session. So, all right, perfect. And we'll make a good point.
Well, you just made your admonition about GMA.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I was digging
Thank
that.
You.
All right. Kelly, what do you got?
All right.
Axel.
I handle the constituent work for the most part around here.
Yes, you do.
Every once in a while I get a couple of really good ones.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You do a great job at that.
This gentleman, now you guys just updated the preliminary plat approval. You extended plats.
Yep.
We did that for what I consider sound policy reasons. The economy has been down. We don't want people's projects to die.
I'm with you.
This gentleman came in. He was very polite, very articulate, and he offered the other perspective, which I wanted to share with you, and I told him I would share with you. He's been living next to a large development that was originally got preliminary approval in 2005. He wanted me to share with you his perspective in the sense that he understands the economy's down. He understands the economic development, job-creating reasons for extending approvals. But his perspective is it's very hard as a neighbor and a citizen to sometimes live next to these things that continue to get extended because you never know if they're truly going to happen or not, and you have to live in an uncertain environment. And also, you're uncertain as to what codes and rules they're going to end up getting vested to. And so he had two things. One was he wanted me to pass this policy discussion on to you and say, hey, there's two sides to that policy. One of them is being a neighbor to one of these places that continually is extended. That's hard because I have to live in uncertain times. I don't know if the development's going to happen. And I said, absolutely, I'll bring that policy up to the board. They like to know both sides to the story when they adopt anything. The other piece was a legal question, and it was actually kind of cool because with the prosecuting attorney's office over here, I was able to have Chris Cook come up because he wanted to know if this development in particular was going to have to use the new or the old stormwater rules, and that's right in our wheelhouse of I don't know, and we have to look at the date. So Chris is handling the legal part of this question. I wanted to pass along to you his complaint about the policy part of the discussion because I just think it's important to share both sides.
Perfect. What else you got?
Sandra Day, you remember her. She is now Councilwoman Sandra Day from Richfield, and she's very heavily involved in the Whipple Creek restoration project in the mill. She requests an audience with the board to discuss both the progress and barriers to the mill.
She requests an audience?
I told her I would ask you a half hour work session or board time. I told her I would ask you
half hour work session.
Good?
Board?
Whipple Creek right, progress. Okay. The last thing is the biggest thing I'm working on currently, and that's that I had my stakeholder meeting with the BPA issue last Friday. City of Castle Rock, Camas, Clark County, Cowlitz County, Pacific Corps, other stakeholders were there. All of the jurisdictions and the stakeholders are working on finalizing our comments. The other thing that came out of that was we kind of agreed that it would be nice to be able to sit down with BPA before the comment period ends on the 25th. I came back this week and put that request into BPA. I checked with your guys' schedules and the Cowlitz Commissioner's schedules, and we're holding the 21st. I think that's a Thursday at 2 o'clock. I have calls into Mark Korsness and
this
Elizabeth
23rd
Klump.
Or 21st?
This 21st. I already checked the calendar.
Thank you.
And the idea there, the way I pitched it, is sit down with the stakeholders, present your preferred alternative, go over the highlights, allow us at that time to talk to you about some of our verbal comments, submit comments in writing if we want, or answer questions. So we're waiting an answer on whether or not they're going to do that for us or not.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Did anyone ask the BPA if any of the 500 kV lines can be put underground for some sections?
The city of Camp, Mayor Higgins, was at our meeting, and that is squarely on point with their comments and what they are pushing for portions of Camas that are very important. And so they are very much so pushing the underground issue with BPA, and they're going to continue.
And did you get Commissioner Madore the letter that we sent that specifically asked for that and the response that we got back from them on that?
I don't know if I've done that yet or not.
Okay. Well, could you make sure that we get that? Perfect. And that's what they came back and said.
And there was also a non-wire study they did. But anyway, so I don't know if they're going to meet with us or not.
Okay. What else you got?
That's all I've got.
Thank you, sir. Mary.
Okay. This is the commissioner's binder from last year's State of the County. We're preparing something comparable for this year for you, which we'll get to you ASAP. Meanwhile, there's a couple things I need you to pay attention to. One is this thing here. This is going to be an engraved award for the Volunteer Spirit winners. The glass and the metal are separate.
Don't drop it.
Exactly.
And
seriously, that's exactly.
Metal is very heavy, so if you handle it, try to handle both pieces together.
Got it. Okay? Next.
Okay. And also, I need to know the best you can guess how many immediate family members you will have at the event so that we can ensure appropriate seating.
Can we get back to you on that? And by when?
ASAP.
Okay. So, board, if you
wouldn't mind. It's next week. I know that you have a number of people that you've encouraged to attend, but we try to ensure special seating for your family. So I'd like to know how many from your family are coming.
My wife is working on that.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
Just regarding a little plaque thing.
Yeah.
Just because we may know that it's in two pieces, when you hand it to them, they may.
We got to tell them.
They've already been.
Because what you might do is hand them that vertical section first, and say, and it comes with the sand.
That's
we had the same thing last year, and we just had to. One person hand them the stuff out so the other people didn't have to talk and hold. Everybody had their hands free. So
all three of us will be up there. We tell
that we only dropped one. That's good.
Yeah,
that would have been a pretty good
bet. Never even game close.
All right.
Okay, so I have more detail if you want it, but I know we're running late, so if you have any questions.
Were you guys able to meet with Holly already about kind of getting prepared?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. And are you guys good with kind of what she was pitching?
Really good.
Okay, I loved the concept as far as really giving a chance to to introduce yourself, tell a little bit why we chose the areas we did, and talk about the great things that the quality of life that we have, and then the work that we need to do to actually make sure that we're bringing jobs and doing the things to continue and working on that.
And I'm assuming that really the purpose has two purposes. One is rah-rah, good, well done, we feel good about ourselves. But the other is, like a state of the union, we would also help to identify and give hope to the vision going forward, so that we know that we're on the right path.
And that's my job. That's the anchor. That's my job.
You get to do it 2 years from now.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe.
No, but that's what it builds toward, is building, that's what they're building, is they're building this kind of the pieces, and then it builds to the anchor of exactly what you're saying.
Great.
And you'll all get to see it before it's, I'm not going to surprise you with anything. And I would hope that none of us surprises any of the others with. I know. So you'll see the text and the copy of it before it happens, and so that you can see it.
Thanks, Steve.
Absolutely, of course.
All right. So other than that, do you have any questions?
Got it. The only... she's dealing with it.
Again?
No, she's...
It's infected the whole website.
Okay, and so they're dealing with it.
Yes, good. IT is dealing with it.
Perfect. Glad to hear it. All right. The only other thing, and I told Commissioner Mielke, and they mentioned stormwater. Supreme Court took our case for the stormwater, which was not necessarily going to happen. I mean, they take like 1 in 8 or 1 in
10, I forget what the number is, but
more than
that. Yeah, more than that, maybe. So
they did take our case?
They did. Wow. Yeah, we found out yesterday afternoon that Supreme Court took review of the case. So,
wow.
Is that good, or is that,
it's good. It will be. It will clarify the role and the boundaries of authority of the Pollution Control Hearings Board. That is the case that is being brought to the Supreme Court. So that's good. It's good. All right. Anything else good to the order? I got to go on the road. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
good
work. You.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you for candy, Commissioner.
Yeah, man. That was good.
Yeah, thank you very much for being on the talk. That's awesome. Great
I
stuff.
Know it. I'm sure thing of a nail.
You got it.
The,
Man, thanks for the chocolate.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
That's what they were talking about.
Okay. We're gonna miss blueberry pie.
Just so I write this correctly.
Oh, I forgot.